Alrighty, it is 9 o'clock. We'll go ahead and get started. Hi everyone, this is Laura Lycan-Jennings from Pearson. I'm here to host this morning the Ohio Park Field Test Regional Training Question and Answer Session webinar. This will be a 3-hour webinar today. From 9 to 9:55, we will talk about user accounts and student data in Pearson Access. This applies to both paper and online testing administrators. We will also talk from 10 to 10:55 about the online test sessions in Pearson Access. This applies to online testing only. And from 11 to 11:55, we'll talk about technical readiness, which applies to online testing only as well. So the first session this morning from 9 to 9:55, these activities will apply to anyone participating in the Park Field Test this spring that are doing both paper and or online testing for the Park Field Test. These are activities that will need to be done regardless of whether you are testing with paper-based testing or computer-based testing. Throughout the session, I will be taking questions live. We have a moderator. Her name is Sally. She's our operator. So what I'll do is I'll be going through a couple of topics. I'll stop and ask for questions, and Sally will go ahead and let you guys ask those questions. She'll instruct you on how to unmute your line so that you can be queued up for the questions. We do have a chat box as well. If you type your questions into the chat box in the WebEx, I will be able to see those. But it'll probably be a little bit easier if we can go through the moderator with live questions, and we are recording the session, so this recording will be sent to the state, and they can potentially post this for you as well. So I just wanted to let sure everybody knows that live questions will be taken throughout the session this morning at each hour throughout the session, as well as you can type in your questions into the chat box if you need to. All right. I already have one question. If we have not previously indicated we wanted to be part of the field test, is it too late to participate? Larry, I'll let you answer that one.
It's not too late from the state of Ohio's perspective. As long as Pearson can accommodate it, we're certainly pleased to have anybody we can get.
All right. So this is Sue Ristler. So Sue, I would suspect that you probably need to give Larry Early a call, and we can get a hold of he can get a hold of us at Pearson, and we can figure out if we can get you guys to participate in the field test if you are still willing to do so. It is not too late to do online testing. I think for paper testing, the paper materials have probably already been ordered. But for online testing, I don't see any reason why we couldn't get you started. There is a question from Daniel Matos. Do I need to teleconference while watching the webinar? I do not have audio. Yes, you will need to teleconference while watching the audio. So I will go ahead and put that teleconference in here. It is 855-273-0521 to call in to the conference. All right, so let's get started. So we're going to spend this first hour talking about user accounts and student data in Pearson Access. Hopefully you all can see my screen. This is the Park Pearson Access site. It's at park.pearson.com. Or you can go to pearsonaccess.com and select Park from the drop-down list. The Park Pearson Access site has three sections to it. The home page, which will give you access to sign into the Park Pearson Access site in order to do what we're going to talk about this morning, creating other user accounts and your student data within Pearson Access. You'll see that on the home page there is information for a calling and support center and related links to important materials and instructional and training opportunities. There's a support tab as well, where you will see all of your resources listed under support. There's technology information, manuals and documents, as well as templates and training. FAQs are listed down below, and we do ask for your feedback on those FAQs. If you feel that there's anything in the FAQs that should be added, please call our customer support center and let us know. We want those FAQs to be working for you. And then there's the training center. This is basically the sandbox or the place where you can do your infrastructure trial, which is your dress rehearsal. This is a place where you can practice. You can do practice activities. You can do actually the entire setup and online testing process from beginning to end, which is the infrastructure trial, your dress rehearsal here. I'll be spending most of my activities here, but I will show you some activities also live in the site. I do see that we have a question in from Stephen Lewis that he cannot see our WebEx. And Larry, I'm not sure if you can see that chat, but if you could potentially send Stephen Lewis the information around the WebEx, that would be great. We have a question here from Roger Kitzmiller. Do test administrators need to be set up in both training and live sites? The answer to that is yes. So let's go ahead and talk about user accounts. So everyone who's going to participate in online testing needs to have an account in the Park Pearson Access site. If you are doing paper-based testing only, then you do not have to have an account in the Pearson Access site. If you are a test administrator, you will not need to be in Pearson Access. But if you are a district coordinator, and if you are a school coordinator, you will need to have an account within the Pearson Access site in both the training center and the live site, which is here. The reason that you need an account in both sites, the live site is actually for setting up your students' information for the field test, and the training center is for you to do practice activities and training activities with not real student data. If you are doing online testing for the Park Field Test, then your test administrators and your technology coordinators will need to get access to both the live site and the training site. So before I move on, we've got a couple of questions here. So the question around the test administrators, do they need to be set up? Yes, they do if you're doing online testing. If you are not doing online testing, then your test administrators do not need to be set up. This webinar is being recorded. For those of you who are wondering if this will be recorded, I will send the recording on to Larry. There's another question here. I have access to the actual testing site, but not the training center. How do I get that? You should be getting your access to the actual site from the same person who gave you access to the training center. So Larry in Ohio, is that the district coordinators or was that the superintendents that we set up for you guys?
I think it was the DTCs.
Okay, so your DTCs were set up by Pearson in both the live site and the training center, and they are responsible to set up other user accounts at the district and school level. So they should have set that up for you. You would have received an email that looked exactly the same as the original email, so you would have gotten two emails that indicated you had user accounts and that you needed to hit the link to set up a password. That would have been, they would have looked exactly the same. So if you by chance threw out an email or you think you didn't get the second email, one of the things you can do to check is if you come here to the sign-on page, either on the live site or the training center is brown, the live site is blue. If you select this forgot your user ID and enter your email address, it will tell you if you have a user account and it will email you that email again so you can set up your password. Okay, let me make sure I've got all my questions here. Everybody's using the chat box, I see. I want to make sure that you guys understand that in just a couple of seconds after I go over user accounts, I'm going to let you ask questions live. So if you do have any questions, if you want to wait just a few minutes, I will let you ask those questions live.
But Laura?
Yes.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I don't have an email address for Stephen Lewis from my listing. If he could send me an email, I'll send him the information he needs to get on the webinar.
Okay, great. So, Stephen, if you are out there, so let me send this out. Let me get this out there for them. All right, so I have accessed the training center. I am a district coordinator here. I'm going to go ahead and set up a user account. User accounts are located here under the administrative management link above the organizations tab. you go to View User Account, which is the very first link once you hit the Administrative Management link. And you can see the user accounts at the organization at which you are located. So I will go ahead and change my organization from a state level to a district level. So at this point, I will be able to see all of my user accounts that have been created at my district, or I can create a new user account. If you are creating a new user account, it's very easy to do. There are three steps, or three parts of a user account. There's first, who is the user? They do need to have a unique user ID. You should be able to put an email address in here. That's the best way to give someone a unique user ID. Their email is usually unique to themselves within your state. If you have any other user ID that you use within your state or within your district for your administrative and teaching staff, you can also input that user ID. As you can see, it can be whatever you need it to be. Their first name, their last name, and their email address. You do not need to put a start and an end date. That will be defaulted to 1 year from when you create the account. So the first thing you do is just indicate who the person is with their email address. You then select the role. There are only four roles in the Park Field Test. You are either a district coordinator, a school coordinator, a test administrator, which is the person in the room monitoring the tests of the students, or you are the technology coordinator. And you are providing technology support for the online testing. As I mentioned before, if you are paper testing only, then you will not need to create accounts for your test administrators and your technology coordinators. You will only need accounts for your district and school coordinators. Your test administrators and technology coordinator roles are only if you are going to be doing online testing. Paper testing does not require those two accounts. I do have a request from Dave Stevens to tell the participants to choose everyone when they post their questions. That is correct. If you are posting any questions in the chat box, please post those to everyone and not me privately. That way everyone gets an opportunity to see those questions in case they have the same question, then we can go ahead and answer that for everyone. So as I mentioned, the first step of a user account is creating who they are, what they're going to be doing. And then the third step is, where do they do this at? They do this at the district level or they do this at the school. You can also assign multiple schools just as much as you can assign multiple roles. So you have the flexibility to allow everyone access to the system as you need to. Additionally, under the support tab, whether you are logged into the site or whether you are on the home page and have not logged in yet, under support in templates, is the user roles and permissions matrix. I'm going to go ahead and save this and open it for you. This lists the four roles, your district coordinator, school coordinator, test administrator, and technology coordinator, and indicates the permissions and functionality each of those roles has for every piece of functionality within the Pearson Access site. So you'll see that your technology coordinators do not have any rights to create any user accounts. So if you need more than one technology support staff, you will need to create those accounts for your technology people. So either at the district level or school level, your district test coordinator or your school test coordinator will need to create all of your technology coordinator accounts. All right, Sally, our operator, is going to allow you guys to ask me some questions. So, Sally?
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from the line of a participant whose information is not yet available. If you queued up for a question, your line is now open.
Hi, this is Richard from Dayton Public Schools. Two-part question. Must we load the student data into both the training center and the live database?
No, you do not. You should load your student data into the live site only. In the training center, we do have the ability for you to create dummy student data so that you can go through your infrastructure trial and your practice, but you should not. We do recommend that you do not put live student data in the training center.
Thank you.
And we'll talk about how to create those dummy students right after we're done with user accounts.
Thank you.
Sure.
Your next question, again, comes from a participant whose information is not available. Please state your name. Your line is now open.
Okay, maybe that's me. This is Jerry Moore from Cincinnati. I've already created several accounts, and now I realize that they should have been created with the user ID being the email address, and I didn't do that. And when I went back and tried to change that, I couldn't change the user ID. Do I have to delete that account and start all over?
So you've got some options here. No, you cannot edit the user ID once the account has been created, but as long as those user IDs are unique to those people, you do not have to change anything. They can continue to use those user IDs. An email address is just a suggestion, but they still can use whatever user ID you gave them. So unless those user IDs are not unique and you need to actually create other accounts for other people, you don't need to change anything. If you wanted to, you can go ahead and delete those accounts and create new ones. That would be the only way to give the person another user ID. If you want to indicate that an account is deleted, you can check the checkbox next to their name in the View User Account list, and you can mark them as locked or deleted, and you can then create another account for them with a different user ID. But you do not have to. If they have a user ID already, it does not matter that that user ID is not an email address. As long as it's unique to them and they're able to access the system, then you should be fine.
Your next question comes from the line of Stacy Rastick. Your line is now open. Stacy, your line is now open.
I have no question at this time.
Your next question comes from a participant whose information is not available. Please state your name. Your line is now open. Caller, if you've queued up for a question, your line is open.
Hi, I'm not sure. That might be me. My name is Timothy Neal, Asheville Area City Schools. And I might be jumping ahead just a little bit, but I heard someone mention student data files, so I thought I'd ask now.
Sure.
When I'm still having issues with it telling me that I have errors in my student data files.
Okay.
When I look at them, I can't seem to determine what those issues are because everything looks the same from student to student the way it should. I didn't know if there was a specific help line that I should call with that or...
You should just call our customer support line, and they should be able to see your student data file and the errors with you and be able to walk you through how to fix those.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Okay,
yeah.
Customer support line.
Yep, just call the customer support line, and that's located on the support page. You'll see
yes.
that phone number there of the park site?
Yes.
Okay, great.
All right, thank you.
I do have a couple of questions here in the chat box that I'll go through. Some from Barb Oyer. Will paper pencil testing be used next year, or also is it just for field testing this year? I do believe that there will be an opportunity for paper testing next year, but I do believe that they are trying to limit that. So I'm not sure what criteria will need to be met in order to be able to do the paper testing next year for the live testing. But I do know that some paper testing will be available next year, and more information around that will probably come after the field test has been completed this year.
Yes, Laura, if I could jump in on that. Indeed, the Department of Education is working through a process so that the districts can apply. We need to know what your needs are in advance in order to order enough paper and make sure all the logistics works out for us. You can pay attention to our ODE website as far as what the paper and pencil option will entail as far as the application goes, and I'm sure we'll be putting out a lot of information to the DTCs over the spring and the summer once we refine the process and have it ready for the districts to apply for paper and pencil. Yes, computers will be the default. If you want paper and pencil, you have to notify us, and we'll tell you how to do that as soon as we get all the details worked out.
And we do have another question here around student data. So someone was, due to weather issues and other things, was unable to get their student data uploaded in time for the paper materials. How, when, or where can we order those tests that are needed? There is a process to order additional materials. That window hasn't opened yet. We will talk a little bit about that in a few minutes. But you can order additional materials. It's located here under the Test Setup tab within the park site. You would want to order those additional materials in the live site. Do not order those in the training center site because nothing will happen, but you will actually want to be in the live site to order those additional materials. There will be an email that will go out shortly. I think it's in the next week to week and a half to let you know that the window is open for ordering those additional materials if you do need to do that. Are there any other questions on the line?
Yes, we do have a question. Your next question comes from the line of Stephanie Gustafson. Your line is now open.
Thank you. Along those same lines, I'm behind on my student data and uploading student data for the online testing. I'm calling from Reynoldsburg, Ohio. I see in one of my emails that for the end of year assessment, the deadline is March 20th, so that's good. But what about the, is it the spring testing then?
Okay, so for your paper materials?
No, for online.
Oh, for online?
So yeah.
You can set up your students for online testing all the way up until the day of testing.
Okay.
Yeah, there's no limit to that one because it's electronically delivered. You can actually add a student to online testing the day before the morning of testing.
Okay. And excuse my ignorance again. I'm behind on this, but I can upload a file, I'm sure, then?
Yes.
Not student by student.
You can do either.
Okay. Perfect.
Absolutely. No problem.
Thank you.
No problem. And we'll talk about how to do that in just a few minutes.
Okay, that's great. Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from the line of a participant whose information is not available. If you queued up for a question, please state your name. Your line is open. Caller, if you've queued up, your line is open.
If you say, I guess that would be me.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. You said there's no cutoff for requesting the online testing because there was a cutoff of February 7th for the PBA.
That was for the paper testing, so the paper materials can be ordered. But for online testing, your students can be uploaded at any time between now and when the test window opens.
Okay, because I'm pretty sure that it said for the online testing that there was a cutoff on one of the emails that I got. But that's okay. I mean, we have our information.
Yeah.
And I just want to make sure that we're not, you know, if we need to put anything else in, it's okay to do it at this point.
It absolutely is. And in a few minutes, we're going to go over the student data and how to add kids as they move around and come into your districts and your schools closer between now and the test window.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Your next question, again, comes from a participant whose information is not available. If you've queued up, state your name. Your line is now open.
Hi, this is Jerry Moore from Cincinnati. I just want to confirm again that you said that as soon as we add a student to the to an account, that student will be able to take a test that day, or is there a 24-hour wait period?
There is not a 24-hour wait period. You can add a student on the day of testing if you need to. So let's go ahead and walk through that process right now since we're having more questions around student data than we are user accounts. Let's go ahead and move on to that. I do have one question in the chat box from user accounts that I'll answer real quick before we do that. There was a question around the technology staff that someone has three different technology support staff, and do they need to set up an account for all three of them, or can they just set up one account that they can all use? You will need to set up an individual account for each person who needs to have access to Pearson Access in order to technically support your program. So if you have three technology support staff that will need to access Pearson Access in order to support your online testing, they'll each need to have their own account. So let's go ahead and move on to student data. So most of you have already entered your student data into the system. And what I'll do is I'll go ahead and log into the live site here so that we can see what it looks like for you guys who are logging in to the live site. All right, I will go ahead and get down to the district level, and then we'll go ahead and talk about student data. So student data in Pearson Access, there's one record for every student. But you need to think of that record kind of like an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper. There's a front and a back side to that student record. So student data is the front side and test management is the back side. So when you come into Pearson Access and you need to make any changes, you will not necessarily just go to one place. You may have to go to both the student data area as well as the test management area for all the changes you need to make. Those changes could be updates to students that have already been uploaded into the system, or those changes could be that you have a new student who's come into your district or your school from another location. So the first thing is that you can send a student data file. The student data file layout or a template that you can use to create your student data file is located here under the support section. There's a student data file layout as well as a field definitions document to tell you what data has to be in each of those files. You would create that file, you would upload it here under Send Student Data, and it would let you know, you would browse, you can validate only to determine if there are any errors that you need to fix before you actually upload it, or you can browse, select your administration, and then send the student data file, and it will tell you here if there are any issues with the file that you've uploaded. You'll see here yesterday that I did upload a file, and 8 of my 8 students had issues. That was because I was uploading students that were already in the system, so it wasn't going to upload them again. So you'll see here that my issues yesterday in my student data file were the student was already assigned to take the grade 9 ELA literacy for the following class, so there was nothing to do. So I can fix those errors, which in this case I don't need to because it's telling me the students are already in the system. But if the errors are something around the date of birth was incorrectly entered, the unique student ID is incorrect, you can fix those errors and send your file again. If you go under Student Data Information, under the Student Data tab, there are both Student Data and Student Data Information. This is where you see, as I mentioned, that front side of your student data. This is where what you see is who the students are and where are they enrolled. That's all you get out of the front side. If I select one of these students and open their record, I see who they are, and I see their enrollments. Where are they going to school? Enrollments are somewhat benign in the system. A student can be enrolled in multiple schools. That's okay. You do not have to unenroll a student who is leaving your district or your school, but you do have to unregister them, and we're going to talk about that in a moment, because a student can only be registered to test at one school location. So having the student enrolled at your school is not necessarily ownership of that student record. Having the student registered at your school, which is here under registered student, is when you own that student record and no one else can do any registration for that student. So remember, the front side of the student data is here under the student data tab, and that is who the student is and where they are enrolled to go to school. When you come over here to test management, register students, this is where all of their test registration information is going to be. You'll notice here that you have to choose which administration you are going to be searching under. When you were under student data, you didn't have to make that choice because where the student is enrolled does not have anything necessarily to do with either of those PBA or EOI administrations. But once you select their PBA or EOI administration, that's where you then see their registration information. So in this particular case, I will search for my students, which are here. If I select one of the students that show up under my test management register students, and I open their record, I will see that they are registered to be tested at this school. This is where if they had multiple enrollments, you would see those listed here, but the checkbox would only be checked for one of the schools. The students can only be registered to test at one school location. If you need the student to test at a different location, you must unregister them from this location and then register them at the other school. All students have to be in a class or what we call a group. So class and group are synonymous. They mean the same thing. So don't feel that you have to group them by their actual class affiliation. You can group them any way you choose. In this particular case, I simply named my class Laura Class 1 and I stuck my students in there. And then they are assigned a test. Now, all of this assigning gets done through the student data file upload process. When you upload a student data file, it will actually put the student in the system and enroll them under student data, as well as it will register them for the administration, it will put them in a group, and it will assign them a test. So all of that happens with the student data file. But you can also do that manually if you have a student who comes into your district or your school from another location. So let's say I'm District A and a student has come into my school from District B. If I don't know if the student was already in the system because I don't know that they were selected for field testing at District B, I can search to find out. Up here under student data, I can search for the student by all organizations. When I do that, the student will come up listed here if they're already in the system, meaning they were selected for field testing at the other district. But they will come up as a black, not underlined name, and I will not be able to open their record because they are not enrolled in my district. But I will be able to see that they're already in the system, so I do not need to create them as a new student because they're already here. All I would need to do is select the checkbox next to their name, and I would be able to add the enrollment of my district to their record. Once I do that, see if I can find my Pearson school. So once I'm able to add that enrollment, then they would become blue and underlined, and they would be enrolled within my school, and I would be able to move forward from there. So if the student comes into your district or school from another location within Ohio, your first step is going to be to search for that student under student data information, all organizations. I do apologize, it seems that it's taking a few minutes for my student data to come back up. Once you've searched for the student and you see that they are already in the system, you just add an enrollment. From there, you would go to test management and search for the student under the administration so that you could add their registration. Once again, you would come here, you would look for an unregistered student because the student is not registered, and you would see if they come up. Now, if the student you just searched for and you just enrolled does not come up as an unregistered student, that means they are registered. And what that means is that the district that they just came from or the school they came from has not unregistered the student. The student is still registered for testing at that location. That means you will not be able to register the student because they're registered somewhere else. But if they come up as unregistered, then that means the other school did unregister the student, and you will be able to then register that student into your school. I don't have any unregistered students enrolled in my school, so they're not here on the list. But you would simply check the box next to their name, and you would be able to, you would simply check the student's name, open their record, and you would be able to register them and put them in a class group and assign them a test. And then they would be registered for testing at your location. So before we move on, I'm going to go ahead and take questions. So Sally, if you could please instruct them to queue up, and I'll be able to take some questions around student data.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment. Your next question comes from the line of Nicole Westendorf. Your line is now open.
Hi. I'm a little confused about the part in terms of registering our students to the correct test and or class and group. I thought you said that we had to go in and do that, but then you said that if we did our student data upload, that it would automatically put them to the test and the group. So I'm just confused about that part.
That is correct. If you use a student data file to upload your students, then they should already be registered in a group and assigned a test.
Okay.
You should be good to go. If you have a student that comes into your school or district from another location within Ohio, you may need to do that manually within the system.
Okay. So if they're, in terms of what that means for their class / group, is that based on the location where they're taking the test, or do we, if we have like some kids taking it in a lab and a couple kids taking it in a separate setting, do we need to change something?
You do not. That will be in your test session. So when we create test sessions, which we'll talk about in the 10 o'clock hour, that's
okay.
When you're going to group your students based on where they're actually testing and the computers and devices that they're actually using.
Okay.
This group is just a registration group. It
okay.
does not have to align with how that they are testing. If you choose to align your students and group them that way, it will make it a little easier for you to create your test sessions, but
okay.
you don't have to.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Your next question comes from the line of a participant whose information is not yet available. Please state your name. Your line is now open.
This is Amy Manchin from Northmont.
Hi.
Hi. When I was doing our upload, it allows you to select one of the options for the test is, you know, you have a PBA, you have an EOY, and then you have a PBA and EOY.
That is correct.
Okay. So for some of our students, they were actually taking the PBA and the EOY, so I selected that as the test. Now, when I go back and look at their file, when you do the upload, it makes you select PBA or EOY.
That's correct, and that's okay. So let me explain that for you.
Okay.
The test form, so when you do, so you'll see here that I'm in the PBA administration, but I'm looking at the student. I can assign the student a math test for PBA and EOI. The reason that that is because the forms for the students that are taking both PBA and EOI is a different form than students who are taking only PBA or only EOI. So I am still only assigning the student here a grade 5 math PBA form, but we've identified those forms as the Condition 1 students. I think Condition 1 is PBA and EOI, and Condition 2 is PBA or EOI. I may have that backwards. So don't worry about that part. What that's just indicating is that this student is taking both administrations, and they need to get the test form for that condition. They will have another test assignment if I were to change to EOI. Then I would be able to search for that student here, which I don't have that student under EOI, and I would see that they have their test assignment for their PBA and EOI here as well. They will only get their PBA form and their EOI form. We've just labeled them that way so we know which forms are the Condition 1 and which ones are the Condition 2 forms.
Okay, because when I go to the, like, I see them under the PBA, but when
yes.
I go to EOI, they don't show up under EOI.
That is correct, because when you did your student data upload, you only uploaded them to the PBA administration.
Yeah.
Okay.
I need to upload that again to the EOI or no?
You will not. If your students are doing PBA and EOI, Pearson is going to roll those registrations over for you when the PBA testing window closes and before the EOI window opens.
Okay. And if I have students who are doing both but I uploaded them separately, is that okay too?
That is okay as well, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, you are fine. So one question that we had in the chat box I did want to show, if you want to see what groups your students are in, when you come over here to Test Management, Register Students, you have some View By options up here. You can view by classes, and that will show you all of the groups that have been created at your organization. And if you select one of those groups, you can then see all the students that are within that group. You have the choice to actually remove students from that group or add students to that group as you want to. So that's one way to search as well. So you can view by classes to see the groups that have been created at your location. I'm at the district level, so I can see all the groups within all the schools in my district. If you are at the school level, you would see the groups only at the school you have access to. If I view by registered students, I can view by every individual student, and in order to see the group they're associated with, I would need to open their record and go to their assigned class tab. Or I can view students' tests, which is only if they've created a if they've done a test attempt. So you'll see that you can view by completed tests. So if the students are taking online tests and the tests have been completed and those completed tests have been processed, you would be able to see the students under that. So since the tests have not been taken yet, right now you can view by classes, you can view by registered students, you can view unregistered students. These are students that are enrolled in your organization, but they are not registered for testing at any of your schools. So that's another way to search for your student data. All right, Sally, I'll take some more questions around student data.
Your next question comes from the line of Lisa Zellner. Your line is now open.
Hi, school. Two questions. One, with the registering of students, what level is that done at? Is that done by the district test coordinator or the school coordinator?
Both the school and the district test coordinator have permissions and functionality to do this. So I think within your district, that's a decision that has to be made. I believe that many of the districts did upload the student data on behalf of the schools, but some of the schools may have uploaded their own student data within the state of Ohio. Larry, I don't know if you can be more clear on that for them, but either the school or the district coordinator have the permissions to upload student data.
Okay, and the second question goes along with a previous question about the end of year and the performance.
Sure.
In the future, you had said that if they were registered under the PBA, then Pearson was going to roll them over for the EOY.
Yes, if they've been selected for both PBA and EOY tests, you only need to register them for the PBA, and we will roll them over their registration to the EOI. But if they are selected for only the PBA or only the EOI, you do need to register them for the PBA and EOI. So we will not create registrations for the students that are taking only the EOI administration.
Okay. In the future, when this goes live, when we're using this, will that still be the same way, or will they have to be uploaded in both places?
I don't know the answer to that, because I'm not sure how they'll structure the tests going forward.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Your next question comes from the line of Amy Rome. Your line is now open.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, good morning. My question is, I downloaded all the students, okay, and in one section I'm seeing one set of students. Like when I go to I'm trying to pull it up here. You can see how tech unsavvy I am. When I go to sessions, I see the schools. But then when I go to registered students, the students in that other one are not showing up. And then I have a school that is altogether not anywhere on here.
Okay, so let's walk through this one. So let me make sure I can understand your question. So you can see your students under registered students.
All of them but my junior high students. And I can see only my high school and intermediate kids under registered students. And then when I go to schools, I have all my schools with their kids, but I still don't have my junior high school because it's the only school I have that's doing an online portion of the test.
Okay, so when you say when you go to schools, where are you going when you go to schools?
I am going to – I go to – where did I go
to? Are you under the test management tab?
I am.
Are you under registered students?
Yes.
Okay, so you're in test management, registered students.
And then I go to classes, and I'm able to see.
And you view, so let me walk through this. So you're going to view by classes.
Huh?
You view by classes, correct?
That is correct.
And you see all the groups that are within your organization, but you do not see any groups created for one of your schools.
That is correct.
Okay. So one thing that you can do is make sure that that school is participating properly in the administration. So if you go under the organizations tab, go to view organizations.
Okay.
You will see your district listed.
Right.
There's a view by school institution button.
Okay, hang on. Where is that?
It's at the top of that list. View by school institution. You now should see all the schools listed.
Oh, okay.
Do you see your junior high?
It's still only coming up as community school.
Okay, so you do not see a school listed. There's a school missing. Is that what you're telling me?
I'm not seeing any schools. I'm just seeing Springboro Community School.
Okay. What you're going to need to do, I would tell you to call our customer support line. You should see all of your schools. Are you a district-level coordinator?
I am. Now, when I hit test administration, I'm seeing park field test. And then when I click on that, I'm seeing that there's no details for this organization.
Okay. So I'm a little lost. I'm not sure where you're selecting. But if you do not see all of your schools listed under the View Organizations, View by Schools, then your schools should be listed there.
Okay.
Within your district.
I got it.
Now, my junior high is listed there.
Okay, if your junior high is listed there, select the name of that school so you can open that organization record.
Okay.
And there should be three tabs across the top, organization details, contacts, and test administration.
That is correct.
If you go to test administration, you'll see PBA and EOI.
That is correct.
Do they say yes or no next to them?
Yes.
Okay, so if they both say yes, then they are marked for participation. So at that point, if you're not seeing any students in your test management register students for that school, then they haven't been uploaded and registered yet. So,
but we uploaded everybody at the same time, and what I'm seeing is, like, when I go back to that test management, when I pull it up by students, none of my elementary students are showing up.
Right.
But then when I go back to the school, they show up under their school.
So what we're going to need to do is, so when you go under student data and you can see they're enrolled, it means that they're enrolled but not registered. So if you can see them under student data as enrolled in your school, but you go to test management and you don't see them under registered student, it means they're not registered. Now, you can still get them registered. What I would ask you to do is call our customer support line so they can walk you through the easiest way to do that.
Okay, thank you.
If you try to look for those students as unregistered under test management registered students, if you view by unregistered and they come up, then you can register from that point.
It's telling me there are no records found under unregistered.
All right, well then I would need to have you call our customer support line so they can try and figure out what happened to your student data and help you get that organized.
Thank you.
Sure. Okay, so I'm going to quickly go ahead and stop the questions for just a few seconds. I do want to move on to accommodations real quickly in your student records. If you have students that have accommodation needs, you will need to assign those accommodation needs within the Pearson Access site. When you go to open that student record under registered students, as I've done here, if you go ahead and hit edit, on their registered students record, you will see at the bottom of the list there's an assessment accommodation category and a drop-down list. We do ask that if your students who need accommodations, that they be assigned an assessment accommodation category. We know that some students will fall into more than one category. For the Parkfield test, we do ask that you pick only one main assessment accommodation category. That will not limit you from being able to apply or give all accommodations to the students that are needed. But PARC is asking that you do select one main accommodation category for your students. The second step to assigning accommodations is under assigned tests. With the test assignment, you would select the test that is listed under the assigned test tab in the student's registration record. You would then select edit, and you would see that there are assessment accommodation options for that test. If the student is paper or online, you need to do this activity, and you will notice that for paper testers, the list of accommodation options is different than for online tests. The list of accommodations is different. So I'll take questions around accommodations now.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from the line of Nancy Talley. Your line is now open.
First of all, I'd like to tell you, your customer service people are wonderful.
Awesome.
When I was uploading them, you couldn't ask for better people. So if anybody's having trouble, please call. I do not have an accommodation question. Mine was on dropping classes for if you put somebody in incorrectly. When I was uploading my people, one of them I put in as a PBA, and they should have only been an EOI.
Okay.
I went ahead and put them in as an EOI, but they're still sitting there as a PBA because I couldn't figure out how to drop the class.
Okay. Well, let me show you how to unregister a student from PBA. So if you have a student registered for an administration, such as I do here, you select the checkbox next to their name, and you just simply remove their registration. If in removing their registration, it will give you an option to go ahead and continue with that action. If in continuing with that action, it doesn't give you a green check mark, it could be because you've already put your student in a test session.
Okay.
If you put your student in an online test session, you must remove them from the test session first. Then you can go ahead and unregister them. And removing them from a test session is very easy. It's the same thing. You would open the test session, check the name, check the box next to their name, remove them from the session, then go to register students, check the box next to their name, and remove their registration.
But there's not a way to remove a whole class.
You should be able to do that here.
Okay, that'll work.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's it. I see it. That's perfect. That's exactly what I need to do. Thank you.
Sure. All right, any questions around accommodations? I know there were some questions on the chat box, so I'm going to go over it one more time, but please type in with any questions. So you go to their registration record. You open up their registration record by selecting the student name. On the very first tab, which is the registration record, you hit edit. At the bottom of the list is the assessment accommodation category. Select one category. Then go to the assigned test tab and actually select the test that is listed. Hit edit when the test record opens, and you will have assessment accommodation options that you can check here. All right, Sally, are there any more questions around accommodations?
Your next question comes from the line of John Hopkinson. Your line is now open.
Yes, this is Patty Trell. I just wanted to have that part about the accommodations repeated.
Okay. All right, if you do need to ask a live question, use them on the chat box. Please press star 1, and that will cue you up for a live question.
And your next question comes from the line of Kathleen Compton. Your line is now open.
Thank you. Why selecting just one accommodation?
You're selecting just one accommodation category. They've asked that for the field test. I don't know if next year when they go live if they'll have the option to select a multiple assessment accommodation categories, but for the field test, they are asking that you select one main accommodation category. But as I mentioned, it doesn't prevent you from giving them the accommodations available in any category that they belong under, because when you go to the assigned test, you can select any accommodations that are applicable for the student.
Can you select those right before the test? Do you have to know that information now?
If they are taking the online test, you can select that information up to testing. But keep in mind, if your student is taking an online test and they are needing an accommodation, you will want to put them in a test session specifically for accommodated students. So we are asking that if you have students with an accommodation in online testing, that they're in a different test session than the general population who do not have that same accommodation. But you can do that at any time in the process.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Nicole Westendorf. Your line is now open.
Hi. I was wondering if you could just demonstrate that again from start to finish. I didn't get this. I missed the first part of where you go to first select their main accommodation category.
Okay. So if you go to test management, register students, you would search for your students. When you find your student, select the student name that is in the search list to open up their registration record.
Okay.
From there, you can edit that registration record, and at the bottom of that list is the assessment accommodation category drop-down list.
Okay.
Additionally, from that same section, if you go to the assigned test tab that you would see at the top next to the registration record tab, there's an assigned test tab.
Right.
You can select the student's test, edit that test, and you can assign accommodations directly to the test. And if they are paper testers, they have a different set of accommodation options than if they are online testers.
Okay, so you pick just one of the original categories, but then you can choose multiple assessment accommodations on this list that you're showing right now.
That is correct.
And then if we, so students, you know, our class selections were made, you know, random selections, so we may have some classes that have students who receive accommodations that are participating or some who are not. So we just do this based on that random selection of who happens to be in these classes.
You know, I'm not sure. From all I can tell you is functionally how to assign those accommodations.
Okay.
How to, the students that have been chosen for the testing and the accommodations that they need, all the accommodation information on what is provided in the park field test is on the parks.org site, as well as your state can give you some information around that. Additional accommodations are available next year, so there'll be even more accommodations available next year. And all I can tell you is that functionally, this is how you would assign those accommodations, and then to make sure that if they're online testing, when you put them in test sessions, you actually put them in test sessions based on accommodations. So if you have students that are all receiving the same accommodation, they should be in the same test session.
Okay.
And students with an accommodation should not be in a test session with students that do not have an accommodation.
Okay. And I'm a district test coordinator. Is this a task that I should complete for all my buildings participating, or can I have the school test coordinator do this for each of their buildings and I just do it for my own building?
Your school test coordinator can do that for their, has the permissions to do that at their location for their
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. We're at time, so I'm going to stop taking questions over the line, but I am going to complete going through some of these chat questions to get some of those answered. We did talk about in this first hour creating user accounts as well as your student data, which remember is both enrollments, which is located under student data, and registration information, which is located under test management, as well as assigning accommodations to your students. So one of the questions we do have on the chat line is when do accommodations need to have been done for your paper testers? If you are paper and pencil testing, you should have already assigned your accommodations for your students. If you have not, please go do so immediately so that your paper materials can be ordered for you properly. Larry, I'm not sure when the deadline for that was. Do you know the date off the top of your head?
No, Laura, I'm sorry, I don't.
But I do believe it is this month, February. So if the deadline is not already passed, then it is coming up probably this week. So please, if you are paper and pencil testing and you need to assign accommodations to your students, please go do so now. You can assign accommodations to students using the student data file upload process. So if you've done that already, then you do not need to go back in and do that again, but you can certainly check and make sure that you have the right accommodations assigned to your students. So some of the other questions before we start on the next hour, which will be around test sessions, we will be recording this. It will be sent out later this week. Should alternate assessment students be included in the pilot? And I believe at this time, alternate assessment students are not included in the pilot. Is that correct, Larry?
That's right.
Yeah, alternate assessment students are not currently included in the field test. Do we need the registrations and test sessions and accommodations for online and paper-based tests? Yes, but for paper-based testing, we need those accommodations now because we need to order your paper materials based on the accommodations that you indicate for some of those students. For online testing students, you do not need to put in those accommodations now unless you are getting ready to set up your test sessions, which we will talk about in the next hour. If you are getting ready to set up your online test sessions, you do not have to do now, but can be done now, then you do want to make sure that your students are indicated for their accommodation before you put them in their online test session. But for your paper-based testers, please do so now so we can get the paper materials out to you properly. Will the test require headphones? Yes. The ELA tests will require headphones for all students regardless of accommodation needs. For general population as well as accommodated students, there is video and audio within the ELA test, and students taking ELA will need earbuds. If the students are taking math, only the accommodated math tests have audio, which is text-to-speech, and earbuds are needed. For students that are taking general population non-accommodated math, they will not need earbuds. So earbuds are needed for all students taking ELA, and earbuds or headphones are needed for students taking accommodated math. They can use their own earbuds or headphones, or you can provide them some inexpensive earbuds or headphones. That is at your discretion. When do accommodations for paper pencil tests need to be done? We've mentioned that needs to be done now. Do you need a reader for each student, or can you use one reader for multiple students? If you have students that need a read aloud and are allowed a read aloud, your proctor in the room can be the read aloud person. You do not necessarily need a read aloud for every student. That would be based on policy within your state and within your district on how you set that up. But you do need to indicate that they need read aloud, and when you create your test sessions, you will indicate it's a read aloud test session as well. All right. If the uploaded students with their accommodations, do we need to select accommodations after we're registered? No, you do not. Can accommodations still be set up for paper-based testing PBA? Yes, please do so now so that we can get those tests out to you properly. Is there a way to import accommodations for a group of students? So if you use the student data file, you would be able to do that. If you select the support page and you go to templates, there is a student data file upload field definitions document. And in the back of that document, it tells you in the student data file upload which fields the accommodation information can be included in. So you'll notice that I am now here on page 13, where we are talking about assessment accommodation category in columns A, B, A, C, A, D, and on. You list all of your accommodation information for your students. So you can upload accommodation information for your students using the student data file if you have a lot of accommodation information to upload. All right, so we are going to go ahead and move on to our next session this morning. We are going to move on to the online test sessions in Pearson Access. This is for online testing only. The next two sessions are for online testing only, but if you do have some questions around student data, user accounts, anything that we've already discussed, when I open up for questions in a few minutes throughout these sessions, please feel free to stay on the line and ask them. I want to get as many questions in as I possibly can for everyone. But we're going to go ahead and move on in the 10 o'clock hour to the online test session process. So we've already talked about creating user accounts, getting your student data into the system, making sure your students are registered, assigned a test, and their accommodations have been identified. Your next step at this point is creating test sessions for your students. Now, before you create test sessions for your students, your technology staff need to have come into Pearson Access and configured TestNav for you and basically indicated that there is a TestNav configuration that indicates what decisions you've made around proctor caching and what decisions have been made and where the online student response files are going to be located. Once that is done, as well as we've made the tests available, you can now create your test sessions within your administration for your online testers. And additionally, for those of you in the first group, you can order your additional materials under Test Setup. So the Test Setup tab does two things for you. It allows you to order materials for your paper testing, so you would make sure that you select the administration you need your materials for, and you go through the process of ordering additional materials here. That order process has not opened up yet, but as soon as you receive the email in about a week or two, you will be able to order those additional materials and track the shipment. As well as under Test Setup, your technology people will come in here. They will configure TestNav for you. We'll talk about that in the 11 o'clock hour. So under Test Management, your students are registered, they're assigned tests, and their accommodations have been made. You would then go as an administrator at the school level or at the district level. It will probably make more sense that the school coordinators are going to be creating the test sessions within the schools. The test sessions are the logistical organization of how the students are going to be tested together in a group. What that means is under registered students, your students may be grouped by class. You may have, in the registration process, grouped all of your students by the teacher that they are in a class with. But if I'm Mrs. Jennings and I have 30 students in my class and they're in my group under registered students, I may not have 30 computers though for the students to test on. If they're going to test in the computer lab and the computer lab only has 15 computers, then when I create my test sessions, I'm actually going to create two test sessions for those students because there's only 15 I can test at a time. So the test sessions are the actual number of students that you are going to be testing at that time. In order to create a test session, you simply come in here and say New Test Session under Test Management, Manage Test Sessions. You need to name your test session, something that will make sense to your test administrator, who's going to be managing the test for you and the test students taking the test that day. The reason that you want to do this is because your test administrators are assigned at the school level and your test sessions are at the school level. So all of your test sessions will be seen by all of your test administrators. You do not assign a test session to an administrator so that that's the only test session they can see. So you need to name your test sessions so that your test administrator knows which test sessions are theirs to monitor. So in this case, I will name this for Mrs. Jennings' class. It's grade 3 ELA, and it's the AM session. So this is Mrs. Jennings' grade 3 ELA morning test session. You select a school. Since I'm at the district level, it is giving me the option to select all schools within my district. If you are a school coordinator, then the only option would be the one school that you have access to. You'll notice that once I selected a school, additional fields showed up over here on the right-hand side around proctor caching. You'll need to know what proctor caching plan has been determined by your technology coordination staff and your support staff. So what does that mean? Proctor caching means that your technology support staff have decided that it is in the best interest of being able to support all of the number of students that you need to online test to actually store the test locally within your network. So Pearson is going to make the test available before the test window opens. The test coordinators will be able to download those tests to a local proctor caching computer within your district or within your school. That will allow your students to pull the test from that location as opposed to pulling the test all the way out across the external ISP to the Pearson servers. It increases your bandwidth and allows you to test a lot more students at one time than you would normally be able to if all the students were pulling their tests from the Pearson servers directly. So when your technology coordinators determine what the proctor caching plan is, you'll need to know what they've determined. So you need a communication plan in place with your district and school coordinators, with your technology support coordinators, so that you understand what they've determined is the proctor caching plan. For the field test, more than likely, you will only have one proctor caching computer option, and it will default here whenever you set up your test session. So you won't have to worry about making choices. But if you are in a district that has particular edge case scenarios with their network bandwidth, and your technology coordination support has decided that they need to set up multiple proctor caching computers in order to maximize the ability to test all the students online that you need to test, you'll want to know what they've set up and how they intend for you to point those test sessions to those proctor caching computers so that if you do have options, that you would be able to make those choices here when creating your test session. So in this particular case, I'm going to name my test session, like I said, something that makes sense to my administrator. I'm going to assign that test session to a school, and I'm going to select a test. I will select a grade 3 ELA literacy test. At this point, I will have the option to determine, is this a read-aloud accommodation group, or is this not a read-aloud accommodation group? If the group of students that I will be testing do require a read-aloud, I can choose that at this point. And a form will come up that will allow me to choose the read-aloud form of this test. If this is not a read-aloud group, then the form selection will be main, or as you can see, there is a background font color option. This is an accommodated form. For students that need to take an accommodated form, your selection would be here. In this particular case, I will not have an accommodated form. This will be the general population test. Over here, I can choose a proctor caching computer. If this checkbox was available, that would mean that there was a district-level proctor caching option. But since I cannot select it, it means that the only proctor caching option I have is at the school level. It will default to that option, and I can move on. I will select a scheduled start date. My scheduled start date can be any date I choose. Pearson is not monitoring this or gathering any data from these fields here around scheduled start date, scheduled time, or location. But your start date is when the soonest the test session can be started. The test session can be started at any date after this date, but it should not be started before this date. You can enter a scheduled start time. As I said, if you have AM and PM classes, because you do not have enough computers, and you will have students testing in the computer center in the morning and students testing in the computer lab in the afternoon, you can put a start time here. Nothing is clocked for you by Pearson. We are not clocking or timing these tests. The test will be timed by the test administrator in the room, the same way a paper test would be timed. This is for your own organizational purposes only. You can also indicate the room that this test is going to be taken in. At this point, I can also add students if there were students available for grade 3. Since I don't have students available for grade 3, let me see if I have grade 9 students. Yes, okay. I'll change this to grade 9 so that I can show you adding students. So, I do have grade 9 students. This is not a read-aloud test. And I can go ahead and add my students. I can add all my students, or I can add only certain students. As I mentioned before, if my students are grouped by a class group that corresponds to the students that I need to test, I can add the entire group of students at one time. But if I need to add a subset of students within that group, I would want to view by students and then select only those students that are going to be in this test session. And I can select save. You can add students at any time once a test session is created. So if I go back to my test session at any time, I will have an add student button, and I can add or remove students as I need to from any test session at any time. I can also move students to another test session. So that's creating a test session. If I go to my manage test session list, I will now see the test session I've created. It is not started. The start date is today or any time after today. I can see the test this session is for, how many students are in it, what school it's associated with, and where the students are testing because I filled out that information. I can also view students under my manage test sessions to see all of my students that are in test sessions and which test sessions they are in. So you can view this either way. When your test administrators log into the system, this is the dashboard that they will use. They will come here to manage test sessions, they will open the test session, and this is the dashboard that they will use to monitor the tests. Once the test sessions are created, the school coordinator who's created the test session needs to contact the technology coordinator or support staff to let them know the test sessions have been created. Because once the test sessions are created, the tests can then be downloaded to the Proctor caching computers. At this point in time, Pearson has not made the tests available for download yet. That will not happen until about 1 to 2 days before the testing window opens. But your technology coordinators need to know that the test sessions have been created because that's the only way that they can download the tests to the Proctor caching computer they've chosen. So you will need to communicate back and forth between your technology coordination staff and your school administrators. So the first step is technology coordinators come in to test setup, create that configuration where they indicate Proctor caching and student response file save locations. They need to communicate to the administrators that they've done that. Then the administrators come in to manage test sessions, create the test sessions, put the students in there, and communicate to the technology coordinators that they've done that. Then the technology coordinators come back in here, open up the test sessions, and hit the Proctor caching button and actually download tests to the Proctor caching computers 1 to 2 days before the test sessions are done. And then they need to contact or communicate email with the test administrators to let them know they've done that. Once those steps are done, your test administrators can come in here and print the authorization tickets for the students. The students have student authorization tickets so that they can enter into the test securely. These authorization tickets give the students a unique username, which is located here, as well as a test passcode for the test. This allows the student access to the test. Think of it in terms of a paper test. You have a box of paper tests that have pre-code labels. And in the paper world, you take those tests and you take those pre-code labels and you give one to every student. This is the same thing. This is the box of tests, and these authorization tickets are the pre-code labels. You give those pre-code labels to every student, and when they log into TestNav, it gives them the test from the box that they're supposed to take. There are also seal codes here that can be printed. The ELA tests come in 3 parts, and the math test come in two parts, which means they will need seal codes for the students to go from part one to part two. It's all one form, and it's all one test, so the students can be in one test session, but they'll take part one on the first day, and then when they're done, they'll hit the page that requires that they need a seal code, and they will raise their hand, and the test proctor can give them the seal code. They can get to part two, they can exit the test and come back the next day and take the second part of the test. So your test proctor can print those student authorization tickets and seal codes here. Additionally, you can print session rosters. So if your test administrators want to have a session roster for each of the tests that they are administrating or managing, they can print those session rosters from here as well. On the day of testing, the test administrator will hand out those authorization tickets to each student, and the students will be able to log into TestNav. But they will not be able to get the test or start the test until the test administrator actually hits the start button on the test session. So the teacher has to start the test session before the authorization tickets will allow the student to access the test. All right, so I'm going to stop here. And I'll go ahead and take some questions. So, Sally, if you can go ahead and let some questions come through, that would be great.
Again, as a reminder, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Your first question comes from the line of Chris Merritt. Your line is now open. Chris Merritt, your line is open. Your next question comes from the line of Jerry Moore. Your line is now open.
Hi. Okay, I've got a couple questions. So our district has decided not to do the proctor caching this time.
Okay.
So can you explain to me what happens when that isn't going to be done? So we bypass all the proctor caching issues.
Okay.
And secondly, I think now I understand what you mean about the seal codes. The seal codes, so they correspond to the different sessions, so that we know that there are three sessions for ELA performance-based assessment, and the SEAL codes get a kid into each of those different sessions. The authorization code is the same code that's used for all three sessions, but the SEAL code is different for each session. So I give the authorization code to a student on Monday and the SEAL code for session one, but on day two, they get the same authorization code but a different SEAL code. Have I got that right now?
You have that exactly correct. So the students have an authorization ticket, as you can see here on my screen, that has their username and password. They would use this to get into each of the sessions every time they come in to test. But the SEAL code that they get is different. So you'll see that there's a SEAL code for Section 1. There's a different SEAL code for Section 2. There would be a different SEAL code for Section 3. So the SEAL code is what gets them from the first part of the test to the second part of the test. The authorization ticket is what gives them access to TestNav to get to the test. And then the SEAL code lets them go from one part to another within the test. It's similar in the paper testing world. You have the pre-code label, which gives them the test booklet, and then the different parts of the test booklet are sealed by a SEAL sticker, and the student has to be instructed to rip open the SEAL sticker to go on to the next part of the test. So it's the same concept. Let me go ahead and answer your question around the proctor caching. If you've chosen not to proctor cache, a TestNav configuration still needs to be created for your location. So if I'm going to create a configuration where I am not going to proctor cache, you still need to come into the system and have a configuration created, because what the TestNav configuration is about the decisions that you've made and making sure the Pearson Access site knows what those decisions are. So if the decision is we don't want to proctor cache, then that's the decision that needs to be indicated here, and you would leave the proctor caching information blank within this configuration. You would indicate where you want your student response files to be saved. If you choose to use the default location, then it will be saved on the home directory of the computer that the student is testing on. They will need read-write access to that home directory. If you do choose to designate two save locations, you can designate the home computer as well as a network share location to accommodate any technical issues that might happen. We'll talk about that more in the next hour. But you do still need to create a TestNav configuration. Even if you are not proctor caching, you would leave these blank. The reason, and then you would save this. And the reason that you would do that is then when you come in here and you create your test sessions, your test session will be created. It will point to that configuration, which will not have any proctor caching computer designated, so that when the students use those authorization tickets to log into TestNav, the very first thing TestNav is going to do before it attempts to deliver a test is it's going to try and validate, and it's going to communicate to Pearson and say, okay, I've got this student, and they're supposed to be taking this test. Where is the test coming from? And Pearson Access will need to tell TestNav, the tests are coming from us, from Pearson. There's no proctor caching location. If there was a proctor caching location, Pearson would tell TestNav, redirect the student to this proctor caching location to get the test. So that still has to be indicated in the system whether you are proctor caching or not.
Sarah understood all that. I didn't. Sarah seemed to understand all that when they were.
Okay, great.
They got to have read-write permissions on their machine because everything is being saved on the kid's machine.
Right.
They understood that. When we discussed this at the last, they understood what they had to do, but we'll confirm it again when she comes down
here. They have to have read-write
on each student's machine.
Okay.
Yeah.
We discussed that. I know Sarah's gone through those videos when she's done.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry.
No problem.
I didn't realize I was still on the air.
That's okay. Sally, what other questions do we have?
The next question comes from the line of Lisa Zellner. Your line is now open.
For the field testing this spring, like with the math, since there's two sessions, could the students do one session in the morning and one session in the afternoon?
Technically, yes, they could. Functionally, yes, they could. There's nothing to prevent that. But I do believe PARC, from a policy standpoint, is requesting that you do not have the students take all sessions of a test on the same day. Larry, I don't know if you want to talk a little bit more about that.
I understand that, and I know that's what PARC's got their administration manual. I think we have to be practical about all of this, though. However, in order to get a standardized field test, we will have to go along with the test administration manual requirements.
Okay, because as I looked through those in the last few days, I did not see that clearly spelled out.
I was looking for that myself, and I think there is going to be some more follow-up communications on this.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Your next question comes from the line of Amy Vangen. Your line is now open.
Okay. I have two questions. First one is there a limit to the number of kids that can be in a session?
No, you can add as many students into the session as you need to, but they should be into the test session based on the group that is testing together. So if you have 30 computers in a testing lab, your test session should only have those 30 students.
Okay, and then my second one is, I noticed when you were creating a session, you can either select the students or you can select it as a class. Since we've uploaded them as a class, would you recommend we create the session based on class, and then if we have kids that have, say, small group accommodations, we move them to another session that we set up?
So if you so you can do a multitude of things. I'm going to tell you right now that if you haven't already grouped your students from a registration level in groups that correspond to how you would set them up in the test session, then it's difficult to change that now. But you can do that. You can go ahead and create a new session, add all your students to it. So let me just do this real quick. I get to show you how quickly and easily you can create test sessions. So you just come in here very quickly, create your test session, pick a scheduled date, done. I can add students. So I can add my entire group of students, and then I can go back and remove the students that I don't want in the session if I want to do it that way. So I can now save this session. I can come back here, and I can select any student I want, and I can remove them or I can move them to another test session if I have an accommodated test session created with no students in it, or I have a makeup test session created, I can move the students. So one of the questions I get is, what if the students are absent? You can move them if you want to a makeup test session, or you can leave them in the test session and they can just start testing the next day. it doesn't matter. It's up to you. If you want to add your students to the test sessions by group, add all the students in the group and then go through and tick the students that need to be removed from that test session, you can do it that way as well. So you can do it any way that you want.
Okay. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of a participant whose information is not yet available. Please state your name. Your line is open. Caller, if you've queued up for a question, your line is open. Your next question comes from the line of Nicole Westendorf. Your line is open.
Hi. I was wondering if there is any type of, sort of checklist for test administrators or some type of, easy way for them to follow these steps when they're, running the session with a classroom of students. I see something on page 44 of the Truth and Access User Guide that's sort of like what I mean, but I'm just picturing that all these steps for people is going to be a very big learning curve.
So you'll want to go to the Test Administrator Manual for Computer-Based Testing and the Test Coordinator Manual for Computer-Based Testing.
Okay. Yeah, I have the Test Coordinator Manual, but I haven't downloaded the Test Administrator Manual.
You're going to want to download that one as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Your next question comes from the line of Jack Appleby. Your line is now open.
Yes. I've got two things. First, I got a little bit lost on the seal codes. I just want to make sure, do you use the same seal code for every student to go, into the second session? It'll be the same number?
That is correct. The seal code is for the entire test session. The authorization tickets are specific to each student.
Okay, and then the other thing is I did call the helpline the other day. As I was reading through the manual, I did get confused on whether we were supposed to give both sessions in one day or one on each day, and they had told me it was supposed to be two, do them in one day. So you just might want to make sure that gets cleared up.
I'll go ahead and mention that to them. What I want to make sure is clear is from a logistical standpoint, nothing will prevent you from giving the students both sessions, all three sessions, all in one day. We are not, as I said, we're not tracking that, we're not clocking that, we're not timing that. How you do that logistically is entirely up to you. Functionality-wise, you will be allowed to give those student test sessions, those different sessions, whenever you need to. Once a test session has started, it cannot be closed or stopped until all the students have been in a complete status or submitted the entire test. So the test session, once started, will stay started for 2 or 3 days, if that's how long it takes you to get all the students tested through all the parts of the test. So for each test, when the students take part one on Monday and they get to that section code, our suggestion is that you give them the seal code on day one to get them into part two, but then they exit after they enter the seal code. The reason that is because they can always review any of their questions in the part that they're in. If at the end of day one, they're supposed to be done, and when they come back on day two, they're not supposed to review the previous part of the test, then when they log in, you want to make sure they can't go back. So if you give them the seal code at the end of day one, that gets them into part two, exit and return later. All of this is something that can be practiced in the sample sets in the tutorial, which I'll show you where those are in just a second. Then when the student logs in with that same authorization ticket on day two, the test administrator will have to resume the test. So the student will be in an exited status from day one. They'll have to resume the test before the authorization ticket will give the student access to the test again. Just like on day one, they had to start the test session before the authorization ticket would give them access to the test. On day two, they'll have to resume them before they can get access to the test using their authorization ticket. Then on day two, they'll log in, they'll already be in the second section of the test, and they won't be able to go backwards to the previous section. So you will want to talk about that process with your test administrators. If they don't give the seal code until the second day, which is also doable, then when the students log in on the second day when they are resumed to test and use their authorization tickets to log in, because that seal code hasn't been put in, they could possibly review the questions from the day before, and you wouldn't want them to do that. If you do want to have your students practice any of these tests, there are sample sets and tutorials. There's a link here under support. Over on the right-hand side, there are sample sets and tutorials. These will help the students practice the process of going through the test, navigating through the test, learning how to take all the different item types that the test will represent, as well as a tutorial that will walk them through the process. Your test administrators and your students should be going through these sample sets and tutorials to get very familiar with the process. On the day of testing, you don't want them having to get familiar at that time. You want them to already be comfortable with the system so that they can focus on the test. Okay, what other questions do I have?
Your next question comes from the line of Barbara Mitchell. Your line is open.
Hi, when you have the test session set up for your accommodations that need a read aloud, you said that you could do more than one at one time. Are the computers synced up so that they are aligned the same tests in the same order?
It depends on what kind of read aloud. If they have a human read aloud, then you want to indicate that this is a read aloud test, and you'll see here that there's a proctor authorization that will also give your test administrator access so that they can know what they're allowed to read and what they're not. It will give them a document that they are allowed to download that will tell them what they should and shouldn't read to the student. If it is a text-to-speech form, meaning that it is not a human read aloud, but it is a computer-based read aloud, it is not that the tests are synced. It is that each student will have the freedom to choose within the test what they want read back to them, so they will need earbuds. And then as they go through the test, wherever each student needs assistance, they will then have a selection within that test so that they can highlight the text and it will read it back to them through the computer, so that each student will get what's read to them based on what they need versus all of them getting the same information. So your read aloud process will work similar to your paper testing read aloud process. Your student in the, your test administrator in the paper testing process has a proctor book that corresponds to the student's tests, and as the students raise their hands because they need something read to them, the test administrator uses that proctor book. Well, the same thing happens in the online world. If it's going to be a human read aloud, we need to know that so that we can send you that proctor book that will correspond to the online test, and when the student raises their hand, the test administrator will know what's allowable to be read and what isn't. If it's a text-to-speech form, then you will have that option to select when you create the test session, then the students will have a computer-based read aloud. The test proctor in the room will not need to read anything to the student, and the student will have tools within the TestNav application that will allow them to highlight the text that they want read back to them as they see fit.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I also had a question about ELA students.
Yes.
When I was signing up, it said electronic dictionary, word-to-word dictionary. Is that the only option, or do they have an option of a paper dictionary?
I think that's a policy question within your state, Larry. I don't know if you can comment if they're allowed to have a paper dictionary in the room if they're online testing.
I'm not sure. I haven't read the accommodations manual thoroughly. It's about 300 pages long. If you want to send me an email, we'll make sure that we get that information out in the communications. I know one of our staffers, Paula Mahaley, has been working with the administration, and we've had other people. Andrew Hinkle has worked with our accommodated students for years reviewing all of this, and they could be a better source. But we'll get an answer for you if you want to go ahead and send me an email. We'll make sure it gets distributed in the district test coordinator's communications.
Okay, thank you. I was having a difficult time trying to find an electronic version that didn't have other functionalities like calculator and thing like that.
Well,
and
you wouldn't.
All of the books have definitions in them.
Yeah, I want to make sure that this is understood. You would not provide the student an electronic version of a dictionary. It would come in the TestNav 8 application. Test Set 8 locks down the computer for the student. So if there's an electronic calculator or electronic dictionary word-for-word option, it will be part of the TestNav 8 application because the TestNav 8 application will not allow any other software to be running on the computer at the time the student is testing.
Well, I think it said handheld device.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I would suspect, I'm just going to go out on a limb here.
English translation for the test, is
yeah. I'm going to go out on a limb here. If your students in the paper testing world are allowed a handheld dictionary, there's no reason they shouldn't be allowed one in the electronic testing world. So the rules should apply the same. If they're allowed a calculator in the paper testing world, they can have a calculator in the online world. They do not necessarily have to use the calculator that comes with TestNav 8. You can let them use a handheld calculator, just like your paper kids are using a handheld calculator. You can let them use a paper dictionary, just like your a handheld book dictionary, just the way your paper kids are using a book dictionary. There's no requirement that they must use that tool within TestNav 8.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Chris Merritt. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks. Quick question, possibly a follow-up, but my first question is, if a student is absent on, let's say, test one of PBA, and then comes in on test the next day, say for like the second part of the PBA, will the student take the second part and then make up the first part? Do they have to be taken in order? How does that work?
Park is requesting that you do have the students take the sessions in order. So when the student who's absent on day one, you can leave them in the test session. This is your choice. Once again, this is another kind of policy and a logistical situation on your end that you can do as you need to. On day two, when all the other students log in using their authorization tickets, they're going to log in right where they left off. And on day two, the student who missed day one, when he logs in, he's going to log on where he left off, which is nowhere. He's going to log in at the beginning of the test. So no one in the room will really know who's logged on where, but when that student uses their authorization ticket, they'll be in section one. They'll be in the first part of the test. They can begin testing. Where you come up to logistical issues is instructions will have to be given to that student different on, you know, for the student who's starting their day one than from the students who are starting day two. You may want to separate that student to give those instructions separately. That's entirely up to you guys. But when the student logs in for the very first time, whether they've missed day one or not of the test session, when they log in for the first time, they're at the beginning of the test.
Okay. And then when everybody is finished and that student is still, like, say, the only student who hasn't finished test three, then you just keep the session open until they finally finish, and then you don't have to remove them. Is that correct? To another.
That's correct. So a session is started and stopped manually by the test administrator, and we are not tracking how long a test session is open because we know they'll be open for days as students take different parts of the test. So timing of the student taking the test is completely up to the test administrator in the room.
Okay, and I was going to ask about that, too. If a student were to become ill in the middle of a test, then what you would want to do is you'd want to mark as the test proctor, you'd want to make sure you marked how much time they spent, because when they come in, you could give them then the remaining time when they come back in to finish, say, like test one.
That is correct. So if a student is ill and has to leave the test, you want to make sure that the test administrator knows how to exit them out of the test properly so that they can be in an exited status so that when they do come back, they're right back where they left off. Go ahead and have the student leave, go to the nurse, go home. When the student comes back, they can resume the test whenever they want. You do not need to remove them from the test session for that. You can have all the other students complete their tests, and you can have the test session stay open with the one student still needing to finish. That's fine. If the student is not going to come back and finish the test, they've taken part one, but they haven't taken part two because they got sick and it's the end of the test window, they're not going to take part two, the test administrator can then at that point mark the student's test complete, which essentially submits the test for the student. So when the students are exiting the test, there are two ways that they're going to exit the test. They're going to exit and return later, or they're going to exit and submit final answers. Once they exit and submit final answers, they will no longer have access to that test form. So at the end of day one, when they're done with section one, they do not want to submit. They want to exit and return later, which is why I highly recommend that you have your students and your test administrators practice these sample sets, which that link doesn't get them to that sample set. So let's go back here. So to the non-secure page where I haven't logged in, select the sample sets and tutorials. So if you go to practice.park.testnav.com or select the sample set and tutorial link from the home page, the sample items are here and the students can practice how to exit the test properly, and your test administrators can practice how to communicate with your students how they want them to test. In your elementary school levels, you may want to have the test administrator instruct the students that they will not exit the test themselves. They're to raise their hand, and the test administrator can come in and exit the test for them properly so they don't accidentally submit their test. But if students are absent, that's fine. They're going to be in exited status, and as soon as they come back, you just resume them and they continue testing. The test session can continue to stay open. There's no issue with that.
If they do, by chance, this will happen somewhere, if they accidentally submit and they're not really done, it was a mistake that they submitted final answers, is there any way to repeal that, if you will, or go back and say, hey, this student really is not finished?
Yeah, for the field test, there is not. For the live operational test next year, I'm sure there will be a process in place because it's mostly driven by policy. There will be a process in place where we can unsubmit a test for you, but you would have to go through an internal process, probably within your district, to determine that it's appropriate, and then someone would have to call us to let us know we could do it. For the field test, they chose not to implement that process because it was an additional burden to the districts and the schools. So if a student does accidentally submit a test, this field test, they will not be able to unsubmit the test. So we want to make sure that everybody understands that the students need to exit the test and return later. And I know that this makes everyone really apprehensive and nervous. Trust me, this has been feedback that has been given very vehemently so far in the last weeks that we've been discussing this with all of the states and all of the districts and all of the schools. So I assure you, next year in the live test, we will have a process for unsubmitting, but for the field test, it will not. So please, you know, relax a little bit. This is a field test. You can always instruct your students to not submit the test, not exit, to just raise their hand, leave the room, have the test administrator do that process, go through those sample sets and tutorials, talk about it amongst yourselves, you know your students better than anybody, and decide what the best process is to help avoid or mitigate that situation.
Thank you.
Sure.
Your next question comes from the line of Patrick O'Connor. Your line is open.
Hi. With these student authorization tickets, and most of these tests will be over more than one day, are those to be collected at the end of each session and then handed back out, or do the students keep those?
Either way would be fine. When the students have exited the test, it doesn't matter that they have their authorization ticket. We recommend that you collect them at the end of every test session and then hand them back out the next day. But that's okay if you don't and they end up keeping them, or they've written down their authorization information, because that night, if they go home and try to log into the test from their home, because they're in exited status, they won't actually be able to access the test until someone has resumed them from the Pearson Access site. So from a security standpoint, it shouldn't be a risk. All the students should be in an exited status. Your test administrator needs to make sure all the students are in an exited status before they leave that test session that day. Then they can come back the next day. You can either have them keep that authorization ticket. Some of them will lose it. That's okay. The information is here in the test administrator's dashboard. Everyone has the same test code. Their individual username numbers are here. They can print the authorization tickets again the next day. So it's really up to you, whatever makes sense.
Yeah, my one concern is students swapping these from day one to day two.
Right. So their authorization ticket information is available here to the test administrator. I would personally suggest you collect those back up. Some schools actually even give the authorization tickets out. The test administrator goes around the room, makes sure everybody's logged in and gets to the start page. So when the students first put in that authorization ticket information and hit the button, it doesn't start the test. It takes them to the page where they would hit the start button. Then the teacher can make sure that they've all gotten to that page and collect all the authorization tickets at that point, at that time, before they even start testing.
Yeah, okay, because some of the documentation talks about when the test is over, those have to be destroyed.
Yes, when the test is over, you should destroy the authorization ticket. But remember, they can't use them to get back into the test when they're in an exited status because they must be resumed through Pearson Access first. So it won't get them into the test alone. All right, what other, we'll take a few more questions, and then I'll go through some questions that are up on the chat.
Your next question comes from the line of Angela Curlett. Your line is open.
Hello, and thank you for doing this for us people that are learning and slowly.
Sure, no problem.
I had called the help desk, and I agree that the people at the help desk are very friendly and very patient. And I just wanted to confirm with you that my 10th graders are taking the paper pencil test, but they're taking the EOI test. And when I go in to try to look for them, they're not there. And I was told that's because all of my other students are taking the PBA test, and so they're in PBA, and I won't get paper pencil PBA when it's time to transfer them to EOI. They'll be transferred to EOI, and I'll just get my paper pencil EOI test for my 10th graders. Is that correct?
That is correct. If your students are marked to take both the PBA and the EOI, then they are currently only registered for PBA in the system right now. When the PBA test window closes, Pearson will roll those registrations over to the EOI administration, and then we will order your materials based on that and send them to you directly, so you will have to do nothing. But
okay,
you, go ahead.
My tenth graders are just supposed to take the EOI on paper pencil, but right now they are loaded in PBA.
And they're not supposed to take PBA at all?
That is correct. They're only supposed to take the EOI paper pencil test. And when I go and look in their file that was, you know, submitted, their data that was submitted, you know how we had to put in the codes?
Yes.
That the code is correct in that it, the code says they're only supposed to take the EOI, but when you look at them on the screen right now, they're registered for PBA and they're not in the EOI, and I understand why they're not in the EOI right now, but I just want to make sure I don't get PBA tests for these kids.
Okay, and you're absolutely right. That is a concern. So when the student data file was uploaded, there's a test administration selection. So even though the test code within the student data file may have been for an EOI test, the test file itself, when you were uploading that file, you needed to select the EOI administration. If the PBA administration was selected, that could be why they're under that test administration. It's okay if you've called our customer support and you've let them know the scenario, then they'll go ahead and ensure that you do not have paper material sent to you. And you told me that they told you they're going to go ahead and roll those students over to EOI for you?
Yes, that they would when that window was open.
Okay, great. What you're going to want to do is when you get the email that window is opened, come in and check and make sure that happens. And the way
they got rolled over.
Yeah,
okay.
You're going to want to just double check.
Okay.
You shouldn't get the paper materials. And actually, if you want to double check, you can unregister those students for PBA. There's no harm in that whatsoever. When you go to test management register students and you search for them under PBA and they all show up, you can select those check boxes next to their names. And you can select all of them at one time, and you can hit remove registration, and that will remove them from the PBA administration. And then when EOI opens up, you can just run that file again and register them for EOI, and you'll be good to go.
But if I'm removing them, then I am removing them from getting rolled over, correct?
Yes. If you remove them, then we won't be able to roll them over for you. So it's entirely up to you. If you want us to do it, then just check it when that window opens to make sure we've done it, and if we haven't, call us. Or if you want to just do it yourself to be sure, you can remove that registration and then just redo it when the window opens with that same file.
Okay, and if I happen to get PBA tests?
Just send them back.
Okay, Marv, I'm glad you said that because that's all I needed to hear.
Yeah,
okay.
Just send them back.
All right. If my my test nav configuration has not been done yet, but I have started setting up test sessions, is that going to make a difference?
Now, your test sessions, you only need test sessions for online testers. If they're paper-based testers, they do not need to be
right.
Test sessions.
Right, I understand that. My third and fifth graders are doing online testing, and I am trying to work, you know, through this. And so I started setting up test sessions, but I heard you say today that test nabs should be run first. Is that correct? Did I mess things up?
No. The test nab configuration within Pearson Access under test setup, your technology
yes.
coordinator should have come in and configured test nab for you before you create your test sessions.
Right, and I'm saying that I have started creating test sessions and my technology person has not run the test nav configuration.
And that's okay. If you have them do it now, you can go back into those test sessions you've created and you can
uh-huh.
edit and have that information added at that time.
Okay, just edit it then.
Yes, you can edit your
okay.
test session.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much.
No problem. I'm going to go ahead and take some questions from the chat box here. So we do have a question, when will the window open to order paper EOI? I don't know when that window is going to open, but it's going to be after the PBA administration is already closed. So it's going to be after the April close date. So it'll be sometime in April that will probably open. Do students and staff have to be in the system in order to view or take the practice items? They do not. If you are in the system, if you do not have a login to Pearson Access, that's all right. Just go to park.pearson.com and go to the related links on the homepage, and the sample sets and tutorials are in a link under related links. You can access that without a login, and all of these sample sets are available without a login. The students do not need an authorization ticket to go through these sample sets of tests, and the tutorial is also available. And no one needs access, a user account or access in order to take these sample sets and the tutorial. So you can access those from without having a login. To practice the online park assessments, do students need an authorization ticket? As I just said, no, they do not. They can practice using those sample sets. We have some questions here. When you are proctor caching, are the student answers saved from the caching server to the local machine? When you are proctor caching, that's how the test is delivered to the students. There is a separate configuration in the TestNav configuration where you indicate where the student response files are supposed to be saved. We recommend that those student response files be saved locally on the student hard drive as well as a secondary location on a network share. That way, in case the computer freezes, the students can just be picked up and moved to a new computer, log right in, and they're right back where they left off because TestNav will look at those responses on the network share. Versus also, if you have a network, an internal network within your district or within your school issue, and the network share is no longer available because the student is saving locally to their computer that they're on, they will not be interrupted in testing and they will be able to continue testing. So that is all part of that test nav configuration that your technology people need to set up for you. Let's see what other questions we have. I know that some people are concerned about the submit and exit and return later. I completely understand. Your voices have absolutely been heard. I know it seems crazy that we would do that. And I'll be honest with you, it's not a slap in the face either that helps the students figure out how they should exit from these sample items. So if you open one of these sample tests and you start the section, if you go over here to exit to log out of TestNav, you'll see that it's just right here and they can easily select the wrong button, and if they submit final answers then their test is submitted versus if they want to exit and finish later. So I do highly suggest that you have conversations with your test administrators as to how you want to handle this so that you can manage this and mitigate it as best as possible. And as I mentioned, it will be different for next year. We've had enough feedback that we know that this for the field test is going to be most likely an issue that will occur, and that's okay for the field test. There's no reporting. This doesn't go on any student records. And for the operational test next year when we go live, obviously we will have a process where, one, it is easier for the students to, one, not make that mistake, and two, if the mistake is made, we will be able to have a process in place where you will be able to unsubmit. So please understand for next year that will be handled. There was a question about paper-based tests and practicing the paper-based tests. We do not have practice for the paper-based tests. We only have sample sets and practice for the online tests. Do we have to close anything out after all the testing is done? So once you have completed testing and all the students are in a complete status, you can close the test session. So you should close all of your test sessions by the end of the testing window. So when you come here to your managed test sessions, let me go ahead and search for mine. You will want to stop your test session, but all of your students will need to be in a completed status. If you had any students that are absent and did not complete the test, you will either need to mark them complete, or you will need to remove them or move them from the test session to another test session if you want to close or stop the test session. But remember that test sessions are not timed. You can start a test session at the beginning of the test window, and you can choose to not stop it until the end of the test window. That is entirely up to you guys how you manage that. We do recommend that you actually have the test administrators start the test session on the day the test sessions are started, and then also stop it on the day that all the tests are submitted, knowing that those are different days. But that is entirely up to you how you manage that. Remember, though, that starting the test session is what makes those authorization tickets on that first day usable and gives access to the test. Once the students are exited, though, a started test session will not give them access to the test using those authorization tickets. They must be resumed, and the resume button will give them access from that point going forward. Let's see. If I register students with a human reader in the student data file, can I go back and change them to a text-to-speech form? Yes, you can. Absolutely. If they are in a test session for a human read aloud by test examiner, you can remove them from that test session, and you can also go back to their registration record and change their accommodation on their registration record and choose to put them in a test session with an accommodated form instead of a read aloud by a test examiner. So you absolutely can make that change. When will the sample sets and tutorials be available? They should be available now. So if you are seeing content not available, you may be in the training center. So if under support you selected training, these training modules are for your coordinators, administrators, and technology support. These are not for the students. The students' information is on the sample sets and tutorials link that is under the related links of the Park Pearson Access homepage. Must the district IT director have full access or limited access to get the districts ready for testing? There is a technology coordinator role that you should assign to your technology person that will give them the access they need to support you. You do not have to make them a district or school coordinator role. When you create their user account, give them the technology coordinator role, and that will give them all the access to the system that they need. If the student does not finish the test, can the rest of the class move on the next day, or do you need to set up a new session? Absolutely, the rest of the class can move on the next day. If the student has not finished a test, it is up to the test administrator in the room who is timing the test to have the student stop testing when it is appropriate according to the timing policy that has been set up by PARC. That information is on the PARC site. You will need to review that information. If the student is taking longer to test than all the other students, there is an end time where the test administrator is supposed to tell the student they need to stop testing at that point, and they will need to exit the test. If it is a test session, then they will need to exit that section, and the next day they will start section two. They will not have completed section one based on the amount of time that it took them to take the test. That is all covered in policy around timing of the test on the PARC site, as well as there is information in the test administrator manual and the test coordinator manual around that process. The next question is, when creating test sessions for students who need accommodations, is it necessary that all of the students receive the same accommodation, or can you set up individual accommodations for the test group? Yes, all of the students in an accommodated test session should be receiving the same accommodation. So you should not mix students in a test session who are receiving different accommodations. Next question, where are the practice materials located? So if you select that link, if you are logged out of Pearson Access, if you go to park.pearson.com, the sample sets and tutorials are linked here under related links. If you select that link, it will take you to practice.park.testnav.com, which is where all of this information is located. Is the read aloud checkbox you showed earlier part of the UDL design or an accommodation? So the read aloud is an accommodation. but you can identify the students in a read-aloud test session and not have identified them as a read-aloud accommodated student. If the students receive an accommodation during online testing and you did not indicate that accommodation in their file, please go back into Pearson Access into their registration account and indicate the accommodations that the students received. So you can always do that after the fact as well. So when you come into the system and you are looking at that student registration, as you see here, even if they've already taken the test, you want to go ahead and indicate that they received an accommodation in their record. You can do that from test sessions, from managed test sessions. So I will go ahead and find my test session. So when I'm in my test session, I have my students. If I select my students from the test session, I can edit their record and I can indicate an accommodation that was received if I didn't previously indicate it before the test was taken. Let's go see. Please show where the sample tests are again. So I've showed that a couple of times. Does each test have to be downloaded to the ProctorCasting computer one by one, each created test session? So yes, each test session will be for each individual test form. Each test form needs to be downloaded to the ProctorCache computer. But if there are multiple test sessions for the same test, such as you have an AM test session for the grade 9 ELA and you have a PM test session for the grade 9 ELA, your technology coordinator does not have to go into both of those test sessions to ProctorCache the test. They only have to go into one of them and ProctorCache the one test. The other test sessions, which are using the same form and are pointed to the same ProctorCache computer, will have access to that form through that process. So they do not have to ProctorCache from every single test session, but they do have to ProctorCache every version of a form of test. So each test session that is set up for an individual form, they will need to open that to ProctorCache those tests. Does resume have to happen for each student or at the session level? So resume will have to happen for each student, but you can select all the students within the session and resume them at one time. So we've reached the 11 o'clock hour. We're going to go ahead and move on to the technical readiness topic. And we're going to talk with the technical coordinators at this point around technical readiness and the system check, proctor caching, and setting up a TestNav configuration. I will again, after I cover some of this material, open this up for live questions. If you have a question at that time, please, you will be able to ask it. And if you have a question around any previously covered material, feel free to ask it as well. It's quite all right. So let's talk about technical readiness. So your system check tool is located at park.pearson.com, the system check link, under related links, or you can come to systemcheck.park.testnav.com directly to the system check tool. At this point, the system check tool is going to do three things for your technology staff. One, it is Java-based, so you will receive this applet question, and you will want to go ahead and accept your Java applet so that you can run system check. System check is going to, one, check the actual computers that the students are taking their tests on to confirm that it's meeting minimum system and hardware requirements. Simply log on to system check at a student's computer and hit the start button, and it will quickly run through and confirm that your browser, Java, and operating system are all meeting minimum requirements and give you an all checks passed. Additionally, there is a verification process as well, where you can select the park.testnav.com link. It will actually launch TestNav. You can type in username as the username and password as the password, and it will actually sign in to a secure test. Once again, you may get this Java applet question. You want to always accept and run your Java applet. It will actually secure the desktop and allow you to load the test and indicate for you that you have loaded the test successfully. And I'm actually going to exit out of that because we are on WebEx and I don't want it to cut me off of the WebEx for you guys. But you would start the test. It would run TestNav securely. You'll see that I cannot access any of my browser bars or menu bars, and it would give you a congratulations screen that would show you that not only have you been able to actually run TestNav, but you've actually also been able to launch the test. So that's the first part. Now, if you have multiple, obviously you have many student testing computers, you do not have to run the system check on every single student computer to make sure they're meeting minimum system requirements. If your computers all have a similar configuration, you can spot check through your computer lab or your library or your stack of laptops that the students use to make sure that they are meeting minimum system requirements for testing. You can also spot check launching TestNav and verifying that it will launch on the computers and actually open a test. The additional part of the system check tool is actually the testing capacity process. So what the testing capacity process will do is it will actually run a small 2 megabyte file, download and upload speed calculations, and tell you what your testing capacity is between your testing computer at your location direct to the Pearson servers. Now, if you are choosing not to proctor cache, I highly suggest you run system checks, determine what your testing capacity numbers are, and make sure that it far exceeds the amount of students that you need to test at any one time. You may be testing 120 students in your district on the Park Field Test in the spring, but you may not be testing all 120 students at one time. If you only have 30 computers in a computer lab at each school, then maybe you're only testing 90 students at any one time. And that's your maximum amount of students that would be logging on at one time to access a test. So you want to make sure that your testing capacity numbers that you get from running this check on the system check tool far exceed your number of 90. Additionally, if you are going to proctor cache, you can go ahead and add a proctor caching computer at this time. So you'll see here I've run this check from my computer, and I can test approximately 242 students at any one time together. Concurrently if I am pulling the test from the Pearson server. You can also select the larger file size for the test forms, and you'll see my number changes down to 121. A lot of the tests in the Park Field Test are very large, especially at the high school level. So please make sure if you've run system check that you've gone ahead and selected the largest test form, which is the text-to-speech form, so that you can see your actual numbers in case you have students that are going to be pulling down some very large tests. All of the tests in ELA have video and audio components, not just the accommodated tests. So you do have some large tests that are going to be coming across. They're anywhere from 20 to 50 megs, potentially. Additionally, you can add a proctor caching computer, and you can do that here. Always indicate port 4480. So you can name your proctor caching computer, you can put the IP address, and you can say save. At that point, it will be listed here, and if you start your system check, it will actually still run a download-upload speed direct to Pearson, as well as a download-upload speed to your proctor cache computer. The assumption being that if you are going direct to within your network, you will actually get a higher number of students that you could test at one time than if you were trying to test students who are externally pulling data from all of from your external ISP or network connection to the Pearson servers. This is a great way for you to figure out what does my caching plan need to be. You want to make sure you're hitting the numbers or exceeding the numbers of students that all need to test maybe at one time at any given time in your administration. Also, run the system check on the same day and time that you plan to be actually testing the students so that you have as much of a correlation as possible to the day of testing. Now, if you do choose to proctor cache, that information is located here under support at park.pearson.com, technology information. You'll see that there's a proctor cache installer for the Macs and a proctor cache installer for the PCs. You can install our proctor caching software. It's very lightweight software. It takes a couple of minutes to install, and you're done. It automatically is started at install. You can then go to system check, set up the proctor cache, and check and make sure that it's working for you and that you're getting the numbers that you need. Additionally, there is a proctor caching installer and guide link under the related links field, which takes you here as well. Your Proctor caching guide is here. If you are using TestNav on iPads or Chromebooks, there is information here on how to set up your iPads and Chromebooks for testing. They are you are not able to run system checks on the iPads and the Chromebooks because they are not Java-based. They do not allow Java or support Java. So you will have to run system check on a desktop or laptop within your network in order to look at your capacity numbers. You will not be able to run system check on your iPads and Chromebooks. But minimum system requirements and instructions on how to configure your iPads and Chromebooks for the Park Field test are located here under the Support Technology Information iPads and Chromebooks, as well as the downloaded installation for your Mac or PC Proctor caching. Now, if you are testing on Mac computers, but you want your Proctor caching to be on a Windows machine or a server, that's fine. This is simply the software for the type of unit that you're going to run Proctor caching on. It has no correlation to the actual computers that the students are testing on. So you can use any computer or any server you choose to run your Proctor caching, and you can Proctor cache at the district or the school level. Once you've set up your Proctor caching and determined that you're going to do that at the district or the school levels, you've got it all set up, your technology coordinators need to sign in to Pearson Access to actually indicate that information so that when the students log into TestNav, Pearson Access can tell TestNav what Proctor caching you've set up so they know how to, so Pearson can direct TestNav to the proper Proctor caching computer. So I'm going to go ahead and get into my Pearson district. When you come into test setup, so you've logged into Pearson Access, you're going to come to test setup, configure test now. You can configure one configuration for a district and one configuration for each school. But within a configuration, you can have multiple Proctor caching settings set up. So you can have one TestNav configuration for each organization, but within those configurations, you can have multiple settings for different Proctor caching locations if you so choose. In this particular case, we have a Proctor caching configuration. We have a configuration set up at a school level with one TestNav setting for a computer that is indicating the IP address, which will tell TestNav where to redirect the students when they log in to get their tests. And it will also indicate the file backup locations for those student response files. We recommend that you always indicate both. So when you come in to create a setting, you make two decisions and you indicate that here. Are we Proctor caching, yes or no? If you are not Proctor caching, you would leave this information blank. If you are Proctor caching, you would put in the name of the Proctor cache computer, the IP address, and port 4480. It's always port 4480. You would also indicate here your save location. Your student response files, we recommend, should primarily be saved on the computer of which they are testing, as well as a secondary location on a network share somewhere, so that if there is a computer hardware problem, the student can just be placed in another room at another computer or just move down the line to another computer, and then they would be able to continue testing from where their save location is on the network share. So we do recommend that you do indicate both. The students will need read-write access to those locations where those files are being saved. All of the students in a test session can be pointing to the same network share because they have unique user IDs when they log into TestNav, and TestNav will create a separate folder structure for each student at that network share location, so they will not be overwriting each other's files. So at this time, I will go ahead and open up the session for questions. Sally, if you could go ahead and instruct people how to open up and ask questions.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, you may press the pound key. Your next question comes from the line of Jerry Moore. Your line is now open.
No, that's from the older session. I'm sorry. No questions yet.
Okay, great. You're more than welcome to ask questions from one of the other sessions as well if you still have some questions that you need on user accounts, student data, or test sessions.
Your next question comes from the line of Roger Saffel. Your line is open.
I was having a problem with the cashier, with the cache server crashing out, and when I called tech support, they told me I had to leave the secondary blank for now, that was a bug they were working on. Do you know if that's been addressed?
You know what? I don't know if that's been addressed, but I'll make note of that here, and I'll go and try and find out if they've resolved that production issue or not.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Donald Whitehead. Your line is open.
When setting up the network share, the secondary, would you use IP address, or would it, does it have to be a MAC drive on the machine itself?
You can use an IP address.
All right.
Yep,
is it, is it going to be like the standard // then IP address, or would it be just IP address and then /s for the folder directory?
You would put the IP address and then the /s for the folder directory, I believe.
All right, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Amy Rome. Your line is now open.
Real quick question. You did answer the question about Chromebooks. I kind of freaked out when I ran the requirements on a Chromebook, and it said I couldn't do that.
Right.
Can you direct to the page where it does have the instructions on how to set up Chromebooks? I can't find that.
Sure. If you go to the support link, whether you're logged into Pearson Access or not, there's a support link from within the signed-in Pearson Access as well as before you sign in. Under technology information on that support link, there is a using TestNav on Chromebook link at that page. And if you select that, it will take you to the using TestNav on Chromebook, which will indicate how to do that.
Okay, perfect. That's great. Thank you.
Sure, no problem.
Your next question comes from the line of Richard Dayton. Your line is open.
Hi, a couple of questions. I really appreciate this session. One, if on the in our district we use an application by Pharonix called Deep Freeze.
Yes.
Based on what I'm hearing, for our testing computers, are you recommending that Deep Freeze will have to be removed if students have to have read-write access to the local device?
Well, it doesn't have to be removed, but you do have to put you do have to set up a thaw file at least. But we have had problems in the past with districts running Deep Freeze, and the thaw file process didn't work as expected. So we do recommend that you at least go through the process of indicating in your thaw file the save locations for the students that need to have rewrite access to those save locations. So that those files aren't wiped out if the student's computer is turned off or at the end of the night if the deep freeze process goes through and cleans things out, because it will remove that information. So you'll want to use that process, but it's not 100%. We've had a lot of success with it with many districts, but we've had a few districts across the state that that thaw file process didn't work with deep freeze. So you're going to have to kind of test that out and see how that works. You can test this with the infrastructure trial. So if you go into the training center, you can actually set everything up. There are tests that can download. I see that one of the questions in the chat window is how do I test that my Proctor caching computer is set up correctly and test will download properly. In the training center of the park.pearson site, you'll need an account for this as well. This is a separate login. So if your district or school coordinator gave you access to the live site, they'll need to give you access to the training center. The infrastructure trial tests are there. If your coordinators can create test sessions for you with fake students, dummy students in them, you can actually download those tests, and you can download them to your Proctor Cache computer to make sure that that works. It will run the diagnostics page to show you that they've been downloaded. And you can also print out authorization tickets and actually log on to a student testing computer and launch those infrastructure trial tests, and you can make sure everything's going to work properly. But, yeah, if you have deep freeze, you do definitely need to at least set up a thaw file for this process.
Is there an for that particular process, has there been an FAQ?
I don't know that there has been, but you can call our customer support, let them know that you're running deep freeze and that you'd like our Level 2 to call you about the process of configuring that, and we'll have our Level 2 guys call you because they're familiar with this.
And the second part of that is you said share file. We run Novell in our environment.
Okay.
What has your experience been in that particular regard with providing student share, student read-write files in that context?
That's worked fine in the past. We've had districts who run that as well, and they've been able to set it up, and they've not had a problem with it. Like I said, if you want specifics on how to maybe configure it to ensure that it will work, please call our customer support and request that Level 2 give you a call. These are our Level 2 technical guys who work specifically with our districts that have unique scenarios and have been doing these configurations with them, and they can probably walk you through exactly what you'll need to do.
Thank you.
Sure.
Your next question comes from the line of Chris Merritt. Your line is open.
Thanks. If on the primary and secondary file location where we, the path that we designate, if is there a way we can test to make sure those will work in the testing environment?
Yes. So if you go to the training center, go ahead and set up a TestNav configuration in the training center with those paths for your save files, and then go ahead and use the infrastructure trial, which is to have your coordinator set up test sessions with the infrastructure trial tests. And you can actually launch those tests, and you can go through that process to make sure that everything is going to work correctly.
So it's the same process that it'll alert us if those files are not being saved correctly.
Right. So your infrastructure trial should be able to let you know if there are any issues. And so if when you go to launch the infrastructure trial test, the first thing TestNav is going to do with the infrastructure trial test, it's the same thing it would do with a live test. It's going to first confirm that it has read-write access to those locations, and if it does, it will not throw up an error, and you'll be able to continue. If it doesn't, it will throw up an early warning message indicating that it cannot save the student response files.
Okay. And my second question was about Chrome or Chromebooks. I saw that in the most recent technology update on tech requirements that you needed Chrome OS version 33 to run TestNav app, but that's not going to be released, I think, until like March 7th, if I saw that right. Is the app ready to go, or do we need to wait till March 7th?
No, the app is ready to go. I will let you know that both the Apple iPad app and the Chromebook Google app are available now, but they are going through some updates right now, and they will be updated in both the Apple and the Chromebook Google store in the coming weeks. So if you want to download those apps now, you certainly can, and then just have your Chromebooks and iPads set to automatic update when those updates are pushed. If you want to wait, an email will be coming out in the next coming weeks as to when those apps are going to be updated. They are fixing an issue with how the graphics are downloaded for those apps. That will make them a little bit more efficient. So you can choose to wait, or you can choose to move forward now and just update the apps at a later time, but they are available now. I do know that there is conflicting information around Chromebook in version 33 or version 32. I do believe that you can be running 32. You do not have to have 33. I think that was just conflicting information between two different sites.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. I did have a question online real quick before we move forward on how to use the infrastructure trial test. So when you log into the training center, which you will notice is indicated by the brown coloring, this is a separate login from the live Pearson Access site. So if you have access to the live Pearson site, that does not mean you have access to the training center. This is a completely separate login that needs to be set up for you. So the person who set up your original login in the live site must set up also a login for you in the training site. But in the training site, you'll see that it looks very similar. The same things can happen. You would come in here and you would configure TestNav just like you would in the live site, and you would put the actual proctor caching computer information in here and the actual save file locations in here. Your administrators would come in and they would create test sessions with dummy students. Students can be created here under Create Students. You should not use live student data in the training center. Those students would then be registered, given test assignments, and you can go directly to creating test sessions. Once those test sessions are created, then you can come in as a technology person, and you can proctor cache those tests. So in this particular case, I have a test session here for the Pearson Sample School. This is the infrastructure trial grade 6 through 8. You can go ahead and proctor cache that test. It is an actual test form with questions and sample items. you can download that to your Proctor caching computer, and you can then look at the dashboard of your Proctor caching computer to make sure that that test downloaded properly. You can also print authorizations tickets, because you'll see all of these fake students have actual authorization ticket information. You can use those authorization tickets to log on with a student computer and actually launch the infrastructure trial test pulling from your Proctor caching computer, and you would be able to see that all of that is working properly. So that is how you would do that in the test center. So does anybody have any other questions?
Your next question comes from the line of Michael Moore. Your line is open.
Yes, two questions. First of all, on the Chromebook setup, how does the student response file fields work for that? Obviously, the primary location is going to be the local, but obviously it can't connect to a network share.
That is correct. For iPads and Chromebooks, because they are going to be accessing TestNav via an app, so the students would not be launching a browser and putting in the TestNav URL like they would on a computer or a laptop. They will actually be accessing TestNav via the app on the iPads and the Chromebooks. The app is actually going to control how the tests are delivered and how the student response files are saved. So in the iPad and Chromebook scenario, you will actually only have one student response file save location. The app will be saving it directly to the device. So we always have a backup in that when the students are taking the test, every 2 to 3 questions, a bundle of student responses is being sent to Pearson. So regardless of whether the student is taking a test on a computer, a desktop, a laptop, the iPads, or the Chromebooks, these little student response file bundles are always going to be communicated to Pearson servers. So that's kind of a third location for those on desktops and laptops. But for the iPads and the Chromebooks, that is the secondary location. So those locations are automatically set up by the app, one directly to the device for every single question the student is answering, and then those bundles are being sent to the Pearson servers throughout the process of the student's testing, as well as the app is going to control how the test is delivered to the students as well. So if you are only iPad testing, you will still want to set up a TestNav configuration, because you have to have that so that Pearson can tell TestNav decisions that you've made, but you can leave those areas blank in the iPad, in the TestNav configuration, because the app is actually going to control that for the iPads and the Chromebooks.
Okay. And then my second question was, I was on a PARC webinar a week ago that talked about potential interference from things like screensavers and that, as far as triggering the security sections of the test. Here's the question. We have certain background agents such as Impero or Synchronize, LandSchool, things like that, or also System Center Configuration Manager, agents that keep our systems managed. Are those going to provide any interference for security purposes?
So if anything is going to possibly run in the background of a computer that a student is on, it will kick the student out of TestNav. Now, if you have listening devices, but nobody's actively using them, such as remote desktop, but nobody's actually trying to remote into the desktop, then that would be fine.
Okay.
Yeah, so you should be good at that point. But if anything's going to pop up, if you have automatic updates for Acrobat or any of the applications, or if your But if there's any automatic updates on the computers that may run during the student's testing, it will kick the student out of the test, and that automatic update will have to be resolved before the student will be able to log back into the test. That could take a matter of just a couple of seconds. You know, the student could be kicked out, raise their hand, the administrator comes over, sees that an automatic update window popped up to update Acrobat, they close it, they would be able to launch TestNav again, and the student's right back into testing. But you obviously don't want that to happen. But if you have listening devices in the background and nobody actively goes into those listening devices, such as remote desktop, then you should be fine.
Okay. Thank you.
And I did want to let everyone know that there are additional instructions on iPads and Chromebooks beyond just running the app. There are some manual configurations on those iPads and Chromebooks that need to be in place so that TestNav is a single app that is running on those devices. So please go to support, technology information, to look at those instructions on how to configure your iPads and your Chromebooks for testing. There's a lot of questions out here about the comment I made about controlling the tests. Chromebooks and iPads at this point. I'm not 100% sure, but I believe that they are going. The app is going to be controlling how the tests are delivered, and it will not necessarily be delivered from your proctor caching location. But I can't guarantee that at this time because they're still going through some updates with those iPad and those Chromebook apps. So you would still probably want to set up your proctor caching, assuming that your iPads and your Chromebooks could be potentially pulling those tests from your proctor caching computer. And I have made a note here to go and find out exactly how that's going to work so that we can publish that information for you very soon as to if you do need to set up proctor caching, if you are only testing on iPads and Chromebooks, if proctor caching will be an option that will benefit you or not. I will find out that information and get back to you on that. All right, what other questions do we have?
Your next question comes from the line of Chris. Your line is now open.
Is there any benefit to adding more than one proctor caching server?
Absolutely. So the more proctor caching servers you install, the more students that you can test. It really will depend on running system check in your scenario and determining what number you hit as far as your testing capacity estimate. If you have an incredibly good network capacity within your district, you could potentially set up just a district-level proctor caching that all of your schools can pull from. And as long as when you run system check, the testing assessment, the testing capacity assessment from that one proctor caching computer exceeds all of the students combined at those schools that need to test at one time, you're good to go. But we do recommend, I certainly do recommend, that if you are going to set up proctor caching, you probably want to do it at each individual school, and only those schools that have specifically bad bandwidth or issues would you set it within the school even more granularly, say in the computer lab and then also in the library. But certainly setting up proctor caching at each individual school is probably a very good idea, and that school, all those students at that one school are just pulling tests from that one proctor caching location. Additionally, what that saves you is some desktop space on your proctor caching machine that you've chosen, because then you only need to download the tests for that school. So for the high school, you would only need to download the high school tests to that proctor caching computer. For the elementary school, only the elementary school tests. If you have a proctor caching computer at your district level, then you would need to download all of the tests for the elementary, middle, and high school, and you would probably need some more server or disk space for the download of all those tests. Any other questions?
Your next question comes from the line of Barb Hip. Your line is now open.
Yes, you were saying when you go into TestNav setup, you would set up your district and your school. If you're only going to proctor cache from your schools and not your district, then you do not need to set up district, correct?
That is correct. You can set up only at the school level if you choose.
Okay. And one other question. When it comes to your save save for the test, can you use your default as a network save as opposed to the computer?
Yes, you can.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Your next question comes from the line of Teresa Luther. Your line is open. Teresa, your line is open. Your next question comes from the line of Paul Consiglio. Your line is open.
Hi, Laura. I've got a quick question for you regarding the number of proctor servers you can set up. Is there any limit? Because we have like about 11 different servers, one for each building, so we could set up as many as we need?
Yes, you can. You can set up as many as you need, absolutely. And for those of you that have a want to set up a proxy, you can do that as well. There are instructions on that, so please go to the TestNav 8 User's Guide or call our customer support if you want to set up multiple proctor cache locations behind a proxy server as well. You can do that also.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Your next question comes from the line of Martin White. Your line is open.
Two quick questions for you. The first one is, what's the storage demand for the secondary storage location for these tests?
So the student response files are very small text files only. The tests are larger, and I know we have some questions about how much disk space would you need for the test, so let me walk through that process. The high school tests are the largest. They can be anywhere from 20 to 50 megs per test form. The middle school tests are a little bit smaller, and then the elementary school tests are probably going to be the smallest. ELA are larger tests than math tests. So if you're going to download all of the tests to a ProctorCache location, I would suggest that you have about 500 megs of space so that you have plenty of space for those tests and a little bit extra. If you're going to download only tests at the school level, you would probably need maybe about 200. So you should be fine with downloading the tests. It's not a lot of space. The tests aren't, when I say they're huge, you know, we're talking 20 to 50 megs a test if you need to download all of them, so you should be fine. The student response files, in contrast, are actually just the text information that's being recorded by the student responses. So all that video and audio isn't part of the student response files. It's just A or B or the fill in the blank answer. And because they're being bundled in little packets to Pearson, every time Pearson receives that bundle, it gives a handshake back to TestNav to say, I've received it, and TestNav then can delete that response file that's been received and will start a new response file. So the student response files are very tiny. You're talking anywhere from 2 to 5K to maybe 10K at the largest per response file. So you don't need a lot of space for those student response files to be saved.
Okay, and I don't have to worry about part one, part two, and part three of an exam then. Once Pearson's received it, it'll actually delete that material?
That is correct. So when the student response files are received by Pearson and Pearson kind of sends that handshake back to TestNav, it automatically takes care of those student response files for you on your location. Also, when the students are completely done testing and they submit the tests, all of those student response files will be deleted.
Okay. And the other question that I had is, do you have to have a routable IP on the Proctor caching, or is it or can you use an internal IP address like a 192 or a 10 address?
You can use an internal IP address, but you need to have a static IP.
So it just has to be static, whatever I set up.
That is correct.
Okay, fine.
I do have some questions here around the Chromebook and the iOS devices in Proctor Cache. Please do not panic. What I'm saying is I do not know. As of right now, my understanding is Proctor Caching still applies and will still work with OS, iOS, and Chromebooks, iPads and Chromebooks. Proctor Caching will still be applicable. But because of some of the updates they're making to the app, I don't know if that's going to continue to be the case once those updates are made, because they are making updates to make it much more efficient for the tests to be delivered to those kinds of devices. So I have made note that I will go and find out how that is going to work, and we will get that information out to you. So don't panic right now that Proctor Caching does not apply to iPads and Chromebooks. What I'm saying is I don't know that they will continue to apply. As of right now, I believe that they do, but due to the updates they're going to be making to those apps in the next week or two, I don't know if that's going to change. Those iPad apps were made available February 17th, so if you have those apps installed, those are the latest apps for those devices, and they are updating those apps, and new apps will be updated shortly. I don't have a date when they'll be available. But due to the updates that they're making, I don't know how Proctor Caching will fit into that scenario, if it still will or not. So don't panic quite yet. Assume Proctor Caching is still part of the process. I have not heard otherwise. All right, any more questions?
Your next question comes from the line of Julie Fulton. Your line is open. Julie Fulton, your line is open.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
My co-coordinator and I are looking at the whole process, and there have been some things that were here earlier that we have questions with. We are trying to figure out the best way to roll this to our staff. Right now it's been primarily the tech coordinator and, you know, us setting this stuff up. I mean, what suggestions do you have? Because it just seems very overwhelming.
Okay. Well, I don't know what to tell you. What seems overwhelming about it? Where are you feeling that you're not able to get what you need done?
Well, right now my account is locked, and I don't even know how that happened. But at the very beginning, when it was saying about registering our students, like, we could see our classes, But when we hit on register students, we can't see anything. And I know there was another lady, and you suggested that they contact support.
Yes. Please, if you're having problems seeing your registered students, please contact our customer support line so they can go through and see what is happening, and they can possibly fix that for you on the call. Your students should be uploaded and registered at this time. If you've run an SCU file, they should be there. If you're not able to see them, then we do need to make sure that, one, it's simply some user issue on explaining how the process works and not a production incident where the data is there, but for some reason there's a display issue that you're not being able to see them. So we do need to have that reported to our customer support line. As far as your user account is locked, if it's locked because potentially you entered your password incorrectly, you can unlock your own user account by going to the sign in section to sign in. Underneath the sign in section to sign into the site, you will see unlock user ID, and you should be able to unlock your own user account. If you cannot unlock your user account, you are a district level person, you can call our customer support and they will unlock that account for you. If you are a school level person and are unable to unlock your account, you will need to call your district level person to unlock that account for you. Since user accounts are owned within the districts and how they're created within the districts, we will only unlock accounts at the district level. But you can get your account unlocked and we can help you with that.
Okay, and then where do you go to get a password for the training site?
So for the training site, whoever created your account for you in the live site needs to create your account for you in the training site. If Pearson created that account for you, then we need to create your training site account. You need to call us and we can do that. If your account was created for you by someone within your district or your superintendent, just call them and they create an account for you in that location. You would have received an email that looked exactly the same as the email for the live site and the first account that was created. So if you got the email twice and you thought the second email was redundant or was the same thing and deleted it, you may already have a user ID. If you do, because an account was created and you just haven't set up the password yet, if you go to sign in, underneath the sign in section is forgot user ID. If you put your email address in there and hit send and you do have a user ID, it will send you that email again so you can set up your password.
Okay, thank you. We can click on view under organization and we can see our classes. They are there, and then if we double click on the classes, we can see the kids, but when we just hit the toggle button for registered students, no one shows up. So we need to contact support for that?
Yes, please contact support. That may be a display issue. I did notice earlier in this presentation when I was going through the process of looking at students, it took a little bit longer. The second or third time I was trying to find my students, nothing was coming up. There could be a server issue on our end. Versus an actual issue on your end. So you're going to want to go ahead and give us a call. If you can see your classes and you can see your students within your classes, then you should be able to see them as registered students, just as a registered student list. And if you can't, please call that in to us so we can look into that.
Will there be a way to access this webinar for colleagues who were unable to attend today?
Sure. There's a couple of options for you. One, the regional training PowerPoint is available to you if you go to, I'll put this on the screen for you, if you go to park.pearson.com/regional training as one word, and that will download for you the actual, I think it's like a 140-page regional training PowerPoint that covers all of this information. Additionally, we are recording today's session, and as soon as I get that recording later this week, I will send that on to Larry and they can post that. And in addition to that, all of the training materials under the support, there are training modules that can be taken. If you go to support and go to training, there are training modules that can be taken. No one needs a login to access those training modules. So they can also take the training modules, which are audio enhanced, animated versions of all of this information as well.
Awesome. That'll be great for our staff. Thank you so much.
Sure. I'm going to go ahead and take some questions off of the chat window. I know there's a lot of questions that have been asked in the chat window. I don't know if some of them have been answered yet or not, but I'm going to go ahead and go through them so that we can make sure we answer as many questions. We've got about 15 minutes left. So there's one question here. Testing in the same location, opting is, well, I think that's in response to a previous question. Let's see. Laura, yesterday I sent an email to tech support and they told me the proctor caching was not an option for Chromebooks and iPads. They said they could only connect to Park's website. Additionally, I do have information in here that someone has already done the infrastructure trial with the iPads, and they did show that the iPad IP addresses were hitting their proctor caching diagnostics page, indicating that the iPads were hitting the proctor caching computer. So as I said before, there is some conflict around information on whether iPads and Chromebooks are or are not going to be taking advantage of proctor caching, and I need to get that information for you and send it to you. So there's conflicting information around that. It may be using it now, and when the iPad and Chromebook apps are updated, it may not at that point, or it may continue to do it at that point. So I will get more information for you on proctor caching with the iPads and the Chromebooks. I'm sorry that I can't answer that information for you today. Do we have to create test sessions for paper testing? No, you do not. If you are paper testing, test sessions do not apply. Test sessions are only for online testing. Let's see what else we have here. So how did the Chromebook app point to a proctor caching server? As I mentioned, I will get back to you on that. We do have a question around running the system tech tool against the proctor caching computer as well as the direct to Pearson. And the direct to Pearson actually gave them a larger capacity number than the proctor caching, which is actually the opposite of what you would expect. If you run system check to get an estimated testing capacity, you should expect to see the number to be probably tripled, if not quadrupled, if you have a proctor caching computer set up in your system check when you run it, than from the Pearson servers. If you don't see that, then you're going to want to look at things like your content filters or your spam filters that could be internal in your network causing a problem. So typically when we find that scenario, which is not terribly uncommon, you want to look at the download speed within the system check tool. So when it runs that process, it will give you the download speed for the direct to Pearson servers as well as the download speed with your internal network to your proctor caching computer. Don't worry about those testing capacity numbers. Look at those download speeds. That's going to give you the hint that if you've got a much slower download speed within your internal network to and from that proctor caching computer than you have from your external ISP network to the Pearson servers, then that's where you need to start troubleshooting. And if you need help with that, please call our customer support line and request that you get level 2 support because you are having this issue. 9 times out of 10, we find that it's a content filter issue within your network that is causing the problem that actually doesn't affect your external ISP network, which is why that is running faster than your internal network. So you'll want to look at those kinds of scenarios if you're having that problem with your system check. We've got a question on the save locations for the response files. Can the secondary data location be the proctor cache server? Yes, it can. There is nothing that would prevent you from doing that, but keep in mind that now that proctor cache server is going to be doing double duty. You're going to have students pulling tests from that server, and tests are not delivered all at one time to the student. They're delivered in bundles and chunks of questions. When the student is able to log on to TestNav and first get to question 1, because TestNav has delivered the first 3 questions to the student, then by the time the student gets to question 2, TestNav has delivered another set of questions and another set of questions. So the test is delivered in bundles of about 2 to 3, maybe 4 questions at a time, depending on their size, to the student while the student starts taking the test. If at the same time you have all of your students writing to that same location their response files, you could potentially see a lot of traffic going to and from that proctor cache computer that may delay or cause some performance issues. So it's not recommended, but it certainly is doable, and it would really depend on the size of the server location that you have for your proctor caching and student response files, as well as checking that download and upload speed when you run your system check. And as long as those are good download and upload speeds, then you should be fine. Because remember, those student response files are very, very small text files that are being saved. If the student has only read-write access to the share, how will it be deleted? So the student will need to have read-write access to the share. In order for TestNav to write the student response files to that location, by default, we're making the assumption that if they have read-write access, they can delete those files. TestNav can write to that location. The assumption is TestNav can delete from that location. If that is not the case, then you will want to make sure that the students are able to write to the location a file as well as delete from the location, because TestNav will need to do that on behalf of the students. There's another question here. My tech told me that we would have to reload all of our Chromebooks to install the TestNav app. That might be correct. It depends on how your Chromebooks are managed within your district and within your school, as well as your iPads. We will be sending instructions on how to do that and what options you have. There are mobile device managers, which are third-party software that could be used to push out updates to your Chromebooks and iPads if they are set up for that. If they are not set up for that, then yes, you may have to touch every Chromebook or every iPad in order to make those updates. So I did want to get that information out to you now so you can plan for that. We do have information on that we will be providing. So please look for that under that update iPad and Chromebook link under the support technical information, how to configure your Chromebooks and your iPads. But you will want to look at some mobile device management ways of managing your devices. We did have a question earlier, too, about students logging on with one universal or generic logon to your local network for testing. You can absolutely do that. You can push out a test configuration to all of the student testing computers, and you can have the students log on with one generic testing logon. That's fine, because they will have individual authorization tickets to TestNav 8, so it doesn't matter that they aren't individually logged on to their computers. It doesn't. That situation will work just fine. We have another question here. With the way student responses are stored on the local machines, does each student need a separate network account? So as I mentioned, no, they do not need a separate network account. That is fine. TestNav will create a separate folder structure for them based on their unique authorization information on their authorization ticket. Should we expect to see the testing capacity is larger due to direct to Pearson than to the cache server? You should see the opposite of that. You should see your testing capacity is larger direct to your caching server than Pearson. If you are not seeing that, as I suggested, it could potentially be a content filter, a spam filter, or a firewall issue within your network that is not applicable to your external ISP. Get a couple of more questions here. What is Larry's last name from the ODE? That is Larry Early, E-A-R-L-Y. So if you need to contact Larry about any specific questions or policy issues, you can email Larry. Larry, I don't know if you want to pipe in with your contact information.
Yes, thanks, Laura. It's larry.early, E-A-R-L-Y, at education.ohio.gov.
Okay. We've got some other questions about the student response files. Can this primary storage location be on the server versus the hardware? Absolutely. You can choose what your primary and secondary response file locations are. We recommend that the primary be the hard drive the student is working on and the secondary be a network share, but you can certainly set it up any way you choose. You can set it up in two separate network share locations, however you want to do that. We're just recommending that you think about all of the types of scenarios that can occur on the day of testing. Hardware can freeze, a laptop or a desktop can freeze, and sometimes just resetting it doesn't always work, and you want to move the student to another computer, so a network share location for that file is good. Sometimes your internal network will go down and you'll need to reset a server, and it will take a few minutes or longer, and the students, if they have a local hard drive location, will be able to test and not be interrupted. So you just want to think through that, and you can set up your response file locations wherever you feel is logistically appropriate for your scenario. So we have some other questions here. Let's see. We talked about how large the tests are to download. Does the Proctor cache computer itself self-clean the cache? No. So the student response files will self-clean, but the Proctor cache does not self-clean. You are able to go in and delete those tests from the Proctor cache computer after the test window if you choose. You will need a special code to do that, and that is located in the TestNav 8 User's Guide. or the ProctorCache User's Guide. I'm not sure which one it's in, but if you want to purge the files from the ProctorCache computer, there's a code for you in one of those two guides, and you will be able to purge those files from your ProctorCache computer. There was a question on the how can we tell if the latest version of the Chromebook app is installed once the latest version is released. We will send you a communication to let you know that there has been an update. Right now, there has only been one app out there. It has not been updated. It was out there as of February 17th. We have not updated either app, but we will be doing so in the next coming weeks, and there will be communication around that. There was a question, do you mean settings for the single app kiosk mode? So yes, for Chromebooks and for iPads, the TestNav 8 app has to run in single app mode. You will do that through guided access on the Apple iPads, and you will do that through kiosk mode on the Chromebooks, and there are instructions on how to configure that through the support link on park.pearson.com, select support. Go to technology information, and there is a link for Chromebooks, and there is a link for iPads of how to configure those. Let's see if there's any more questions. Can the primary and secondary save locations be set up on two separate servers to avoid problems with deep freeze? Absolutely. I would certainly recommend that you do that. Deep freeze can mess that up, so you want to avoid that at all costs. Okay, are there any other questions on the phone?
There certainly are. We do have your next question from the line of Dana Davis. Your line is open.
Hi, I'm going back to a session from the last hour, and my question is, which tests have multiple sessions?
Okay, so ELA tests, all of the ELA tests have multiple sessions, and I believe all of the math tests. I believe ELA has three sessions, and the math tests have two. So
okay.
As far as I know, all of the tests have separate sessions. I don't know that there are any park tests that don't.
Okay. All right, thank you.
If you looked at the ODE webpage on the field test, there should be an explanation there. Or you can go to the park online and see an explanation of the structure of the test there, too.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Danielle Matos. Your line is open. Danielle Matos, your line is open.
Oh, no, I think we have ours answered. We actually sent a question and someone else talked about the same thing, so I think we're good.
Okay, great.
If you would like to withdraw your question, you may press the pound key. And your next question comes from the line of Michael McGill. Your line is open. Michael McGill, if your line is on mute, please unmute. Your next question comes from the line of Richard Doberstein. Your line is open.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I had a question regarding the proctor caching, and one of my principals was asking whether or not it was feasible to have, if a student enters a test on test day, we have proctor caching set up and they're using that. On the second part of the test, is it feasible to turn off proctor caching, or is that not really a possibility?
You will want to keep proctor caching running on the second day, because as the student is testing on the first day, when they log out of TestNav, it will go back. So when the student is testing, it's delivering the full test to the student so they can continue testing. At some point, it will deliver the entire test, and the student can go on. But once the student exits the test, when they log in the next day, it has to go back and re-deliver the test to the student. It's not going to keep the test at that student location once they log out. So you need to have proctor caching running every time the student logs in so that they can get the test delivered to them.
Okay, and you talked about the size of the tests, like specifically for math, about 50 megabytes. Is that content, if we were not proctor caching, that 50 meg file or whatever size it is would be delivered to every desktop? Is that correct?
That is correct. So it's probably the ELA files at the high school level that are probably that large. The math tests are probably not quite that large because ELA has video and audio. The math tests for the general population don't necessarily have all of that, but the high school tests are the largest. The middle school are kind of a little bit smaller, and the elementary school are a little smaller than that. But the tests are somewhat significant, and they have a variety of pieces and parts. They've got, you know, each item, each audio clip, each video clip, imagery. So if you are not proctor caching, then each student will be pulling all of that same information for each student from the Pearson servers across your network, versus if you are proctor caching, then those students are pulling it directly from within your network at that one proctor cache location. So it is a bit of a pull on your external network if you're having all the students do that without proctor caching.
I understand. Thank you very much.
Sure. We do have a question here. What if the proctor cache crashes during testing? If the tests have already been fully delivered from the proctor cache machine to the student computers, and the proctor cache machine goes down for whatever reason, or the network connection internally from the student computers to the proctor caching machine is down, the students will continue testing without an issue because the test has been fully delivered. If the test has not been fully delivered when the proctor caching machine goes down, an early warning message will come up on the student's computer that will prevent them from moving forward in the test because the test has not been fully delivered, and the student will have to raise their hand, and the test proctor will then have to get support in order to work through that scenario. You can always set up a backup proctor caching computer as well, and you can just, if you can't get the original proctor caching computer or server back online very quickly, if you have a backup proctor caching, you can just point the test session from that proctor caching computer to your backup location, and the students can get back up and running pretty quickly, so you do have some options there. What other questions do we have today? It is now noon. I know the sessions are due to be over, but if you have some more questions, I'm more than happy to stay on the line for a few more minutes, 15, 20 more minutes if you'd like to ask more questions. So please feel free to go forward if you are available to stay on the line and ask questions.
Your next question comes from the line of Martin Herr. Your line is open.
Yeah, I have a question on the Windows response file backup location.
Sure.
I have, you had mentioned the secondary location was supposed to be the IP and then a shared folder.
Yes.
Every time I do that, I get it contains an invalid value that it shouldn't end with a period, and there's no period in it. So
okay.
What am I doing?
So I did get earlier that it was reported that there is a production issue currently open on the secondary student response file location field. So I've made note to go ahead and figure out where that production issue is. It could be a result of that. But I would call that into our customer support line, and maybe they can, if they find out it's not the production issue that's causing the problem, they may be able to get that worked out for you. But do know that there is a production issue currently open on that secondary student response file field right now.
Okay. And if we leave the primary blank, it's going to save to the user's default user folder?
Yes, their home directory.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Your next question comes from the line of Eric Heinrich. Your line is open.
Yes, I think you've answered most of my questions. Could you demonstrate where the on the training center where you would actually go out to create your account or have the testing coordinator create the account?
Sure. I'm going to log in right now to the training center. Accounts are created under administrative management, which is this link above the organizations tab when you are logged into the system.
Okay, he would have been given an additional account to basically get in there first then.
That is correct.
Okay.
Yes. You have to create the accounts from within the site.
Okay.
Sure. I do have a question here, too. Somebody is asking, how exactly do you proctor cache the tests? So the test sessions must be set up. So once proctor caching is set up, the test coordinator, which is, could be the school test coordinator or the district test coordinator, needs to actually create the test sessions and add students to those test sessions. Once those test sessions are created, then the proctor caching can begin. So you must first have a test session with students in the test session, and the infrastructure trial grades 6 through 8 here in this example would now be eligible to be proctor cached, and you would open the test session, and you would hit the proctor caching button, and it would then allow you to proctor cache down to the location that has been designated for this server, for this session. So that's how you would actually download the test.
Would that work with your real Proctor cache servers?
Yes.
Okay.
But you want to actually, for the infrastructure trial, you want to set up your testnet configurations and your test sessions pointing to those Proctor cache computers just like you would in real time. You want them actually pointed to the real Proctor caching computers. These are real tests that you can download and make sure that everything's going to work properly.
Okay. On the test sessions, on the real ones, can they go ahead and start creating those now, or do they have to, I guess, wait?
They can create the test sessions now for the live site as well as in the training center. But for the live site, the tests are only placeholders, and the actual test content is not available to be downloaded yet to the Proctor cache computers. In the training center, the infrastructure trial test, the actual test content is available. But in the live site, only the test placeholders are available so that test coordinators can begin to create test sessions. But you will not be able to Proctor cache or download those tests to your Proctor cache location until about 1 to 2 days before the test window opens.
Okay. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Your next question comes from the line of George Woods. Your line is open.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes. When we download the test, can we download to one cache machine and copy to the other cache machines, or do we need to actually download to each individual cache machine?
You can download and copy.
Thank you.
No problem.
Your next question comes from the line of Barbara Mitchell. Your line is open.
Hi, Laura. I have another accommodation question. If a student has an accommodation of a reader, and I put them in initially as having a human reader, and then they choose to have it read to them online, is that possible?
Yes.
Mid-test?
Yep, that's fine.
Like after a session?
Yep, that's fine.
Okay. And then if the student chooses not to have any reader, even though that they're granted one with their accommodations, should that be marked?
You would probably at that point want to indicate that they did not have read aloud, and you would want to remove that accommodation from their account.
Okay. And then if the next day they choose to use it again, then mark it again?
Well, if they're still taking the same test, so you wouldn't remove or change an accommodation on a student until they're fully completed taking the test. So if they're taking part one, part two, part three, at the end of part three when they submit the actual test, at that point, if they took some kind of read aloud, then you would keep that accommodation with their account. If they didn't take any read aloud for any parts of the test, then you should remove that accommodation from their account.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Your next question comes from the line of Jerry Moore. Your line is open.
Hi. I have a couple questions. The first one is about the infrastructure trial. Is that I've been expecting a practice test from Park that all students can take without having to actually log in. But
correct.
Am I correct in stating that the infrastructure trial is what you've been describing as the practice, and there is no practice test available for all students later in the year?
Actually, no. So the infrastructure trial tests are tests that the students can participate in the infrastructure trial with and practice, but the actual sample sets that the students should be using to practice that give them different item types and help them practice the different item types that they will experience are on the sample set and tutorial link under related links. So if you go to Park.
Okay, I know where those are, the sample items, but that's not quite a practice test. Those are just sample items to review.
Jerry, watch for communications on the practice test. I've been seeing updates daily, so we'll be getting that information out to you just as soon as we find it, as soon as they complete that process.
Okay. A couple more questions. One thing that has, I've been confused about is the term session. So we saw earlier in the field test guidelines that there were three sessions for the performance-based assessment, ELA, for example, and two for math. But now we know that someone, the test administrator, sets up a test session.
Right.
I've always equated the two, but they're not the same. In a test session, students can actually complete all three of the different performance-based test sessions, correct?
That is correct.
Yeah.
So PARC has used the term session, and so has Pearson in its functionality, but they are two different things. So the students get put in one test session within the PARC Pearson Access site to take the ELA test, which has three sessions to it. They do not have to be put in three different test sessions in the Pearson Access site. They're in one test session. It's one form that has three parts.
Okay, got it. So it would be helpful if that got cleared up. But here's what I want to know. So I create a test session. Let's say I'm creating a test session, and I've got 2 hours. And one session right now has, the first session has 60 minutes, and the second session has 60 minutes. I'm expecting to get all kids finished in these 2 hours. But, of course, I don't. I've made available the SEAL code that allows students to move from session one to session two at any time. Is that not correct?
Well, the policy is that you are not supposed to be doing that. The students are supposed to be taking the first session, and you're supposed to time all the students in that first session of the test until they are completed and make sure that they finish within time.
Okay, so
all the students start the second session at the same time. They should start the second or the third sessions at the same time.
Okay, that's what I wanted to clear up. So you really have to finish all of the first sessions for all kids before you move any one student into session two.
That is correct. That is the intent.
Okay, so that's going to be difficult, but I get it, because I think I read in the directions that the teacher could write the SEAL code on the board, but the teacher doesn't want to do that. The teacher wants to keep those SEAL codes because you want to lockstep the movement from session one to session two to session three.
Correct. You would not want to write the SEAL code on the board until you're at the end of session one and you're ready for all students to enter that SEAL code to go on to session two.
Okay, that's helpful. That's what I was thinking we had to do. But okay. Now, accommodations.
Yes.
So you said several times that if a kid is getting accommodations, they have to be in their own testing group session window, but I want to make sure that that's exactly correct, because let me ask you, a student, so all kids have to have headphones for the ELA sessions.
Yes.
If a student has the text-to-speech accommodation, and they're getting that accommodation through their headset or earphones, are you telling me it's necessary that that student be tested in a separate room? His text-to-speech will not be heard by anybody else because he's getting it through his earphones.
That is correct. So they do not necessarily have to be in a separate room. That's a choice that you can make. But in the Pearson Access system, because the text-to-speech is a different form, they will have to be in a different test session within the system because you're assigning them a different form than the other students. A test session can only be one form for all the students in that. You can't actually mix it. It doesn't allow that. So you'd have to put that person, that student, in a separate test session in the Pearson Access system. But if you choose to have both of those test sessions occur in the same, say, computer lab at the same time, your test administrator can just start both those test sessions at the same time and start timing the kids at the same time. There's nothing wrong with that. That's a policy issue on your end.
Okay, that's great news. So what I need to know now is which of the accommodations are result in a separate form.
So that information, as Larry mentioned early, you'll need to look at the test setup is PARC at the PARC.org site, or I believe Larry, you mentioned that on the local Ohio site, that information should be available.
Yeah. Jerry, send me an email, too, and we'll make sure that we get this tracked down for you.
Okay. Because what I need, here's what I'm trying to figure out. You know, I see the list of accommodations now through the test management system. They don't correspond well to the testing accommodations in the earlier manual that we got from PARC. I'd like to see a correlation between what's on test management system, what's in the manual, how that relates to the pre-ID file in terms of which ones I can pre-identify, and then which ones result in a separate form. Because that's, in order to plan this all, that's what I need to know. And I hate it that I'm going to have to try to figure this out myself. It seems to me that...
What we can do to help you out, Jerry.
Okay, so that's what I want. I'll send you an email.
Thank you.
Let's see. Okay, so that's it for now. I may have another one. I'll keep listening. Thanks.
Okay, no problem. I do have a question online on the chat box around their organization in the training center. If you are in the training center and you are finding that your organization is not available, you are missing a school, or you are unable to register students at one of your schools, I'm going to show you quickly how to check to make sure that, one, all of your organizations have been created in the system. I do know that some organizations did get missed in the process of creating them in the training center. And also you want to make sure that your organization is set to participate. This is applicable to both the training center and the live site if you're having any issues with registering students for an organization. Under the Organizations tab, if you view organizations, based on the organization level you are at, so I will go ahead and be at a district level just so you guys can see the same level of information similar. I will see the same level of information similar to what you guys see at the district level. But as I mentioned, if you go to organizations, view organizations, you should see your organization listed here. If you are a district person, you would see your district listed. If you are a school level person, you would see the school listed. At a district level, if you want to view by school institution, which is the radio button right below the view organization's title on the page, you should see all the schools listed in your organization. If one of the schools that should be in your organization that is participating in the field test is not listed in the training center, you can create a new organization. You just create a new organization, put the information in there, and say save, and your school will be listed. There's a second step, though. If you're trying to register students for one of your schools and you are unable to register the students, it is not letting you do that, it is not letting you select a test or register them, it could be that your school was not set to participate. If you come here to view organizations and you select your school that's listed under view organizations, go to the test administration tab when you open that record and you will see the administrations listed. They should say yes next to them in the participation column. If they don't, you can select the change link and you can turn it to yes. Once your school is listed and they are set to yes participation, you should be able to register all of your students. So if you are having problems in the training center, it may be that, one, your organization was missed and was not created as intended, or two, it was created and is not set to participate in the administration. So that's how you would fix that. Okay, we can go ahead and take more questions for a couple more minutes.
Your next question comes from the line of Brad Lindquist. Your line is open.
Hi. Considering the paper tests, the way I understood it is PBA should have already been ordered, but EOY, the ordering is not even open yet and probably won't be open until PBA is done. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
Your next question comes from the line of Kristen Foreman. Your line is open.
Hi. I just have a couple of questions.
Sure.
My first question is about the seal codes.
Yes.
Is there a way to have the test administrator put in the seal code one time for everybody in that session, or does each student have to do it themselves?
There is no way for the test administrator to do that one time for all students. The test administrator would have to go around the room to each student computer and enter the seal code, because the tests are specific to the students, so you need to think of it in the way of a paper test. The test session is the box of paper tests, the authorization ticket is their pre-code label, and then the seal code is each individual sticker on everyone's test booklet. So each student has to basically rip open that seal code sticker because they have their own individual test booklet.
Okay, and your recommendation is to do that when they finish before they log out for the day?
That would be my recommendation. Because on day two, when they come back and log in using their authorization ticket, once the test administrator has resumed them to allow them to test and they put in their authorization ticket information in to access the test, They will be accessed wherever they left off from the day before. If they haven't put the seal code in, then they are actually at the end of Section 1, and they could potentially go back to any one of those questions, which would be a testing violation.
Okay. My next question is about the accommodations, the text-to-speech, and the human read-aloud.
Yes.
Is that a district decision as to which one we would like our students to choose?
You know what? I don't know the answer to that question. Larry, do you know?
I think it is. I think it's that will leave to you. I mean, we're not going to set any firm policy one way or the other because you know your students best, and you may have an IEP, you may have some documentation that explains what it is for the students, how they've been instructed, that sort of thing. So we're leaving it to you.
Okay. And I just have one last question, and it is about because we have to create different test sessions for students to get separate forms, and I understand how that works. So my question is, if I'm the test administrator, can I administer more than one test session at a time, or do I need to be logged into two separate computers?
You can actually administer two sessions at one time. You would just toggle between those from the one computer that your test administrator is on. So your test administrator will see all the test sessions listed for that school. If there are two test sessions that she's administrating at the same time in the computer lab, simply because one is for the text-to-speech and one is for the general population, but she's got them all in the same room, she can launch the first test session, start it, launch the second test session, start it. She can toggle between the two test sessions. Keep in mind, when the students log into TestNav with their authorization ticket, they log in with their authorization ticket, which takes them to a start page. So I would recommend that the instructions are that the test administrator hands out the authorization ticket, goes over, starts the test session, tells the students to enter their authorization ticket information and go into the test, the start page, then can walk around and make sure everyone's at the start page, and then at that point can say, okay, everyone, start your test. The kid hits the start test button, and she can start timing them at that point. But you can launch two test sessions at the same time from one computer.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you very much.
Sure, no problem.
Your next question comes from the line of Bill Luttman. Your line is open.
Hello. More questions about the capacity and proctor caching server, so I apologize if you've already answered
that. No, that's fine.
So I keep running into a brick wall here. Over wireless, verify that there is no filter for the firewall exclusions have been added per your guidelines.
Okay.
And I run the infrastructure test to see capacity. I have a proctor caching server, and consistently over wireless, I get better results direct to Pearson than I do
in
the proctor caching. And then if I flip over to the wire, just to gigabit Ethernet, it gives me the results that you're talking about. Like I can test 3,300 concurrent against the proctor caching, and then 200 direct. But over wireless, I'm mystified as to what I'm missing.
So what that's indicating to me, what I would assume then at that point, is your wireless access point is not able to support the number of students that you need to test, and you may need more wireless access points. If you want to kind of troubleshoot or brainstorm through that process, I would suggest you call our customer support line and request level 2 give you a call. Because we do tell people wireless access testing is absolutely acceptable, but you did exactly what you needed to do. You test wired and then you test wireless with a system check to see where your wireless access point is impacting your testing capacity, and it sounds to me like your wireless access point is not able to handle the capacity.
But I would not expect one access point to handle 3,000. So
that is correct. So what's happening is, the number that you're getting under wireless then is from that computer using that wireless access point. If from that computer using that wireless access point you would only need 20 or 30 kids and you're getting beyond that number, then you're good to go. When you're wired, which is the network of the whole school, and you would be getting a lot higher numbers, of course.
That describes the discrepancy. It's testing against the direct, basically the wireless to wired bridge that I have in my single AP. And so having an access point basically in all classrooms and all buildings, then I really, the infrastructure trial then is deceptive because it's just that single point of entry to the
network.
Correct.
It is just that single point of entry. You would want to check all of your wireless access points.
And the only thing I can't explain is that I run the test without changing anything. just letting it sit there, and then I click test again, and it's like a guessing game. It's always different.
Yeah.
I just ran it again, and I mean, within minutes, like within 1 minute,
yeah.
And my results direct to Pearson used to be 200, now it's 800, and then I got to figure that some of the variables there are your ability to handle bandwidth and people connecting to you. Isn't that correct?
Actually, most of the variables are probably going to be within your location. It's going to be the time of day, how many people, if it's getting towards lunchtime and people are logging on to the Internet, that usually will impact your numbers. We do tell you that the system check tool is just that one moment in time. If you run it 5 minutes later, you will get different numbers based on the constant different network activity happening within your environment. What I can tell you here at Pearson is that we are expecting about 1.4 million students to be testing online in the Park Field Test. That is not new to us. We have tested over 1.4 million students in any spring administration before, so it is most likely not our bandwidth issue on our end, because we've done significant testing in the past few years. We are not expecting the field test for Park to give us any higher numbers than we've already experienced before with no issues on the Pearson side. So typically, we would go back and ask you to look at all of your network traffic. We did just have an issue like this actually occur when we were in New York running the same test. We ran the test, and 30 minutes later we did it again, and all of a sudden it wasn't able to do anything. And we found that during the lunch hour, there was a class that was taking the lunch hour to view YouTube videos as an educational process, and it was actually
right.
impacting their network significantly, and they didn't realize that. So it could be any number of things that are impacting your network capacity. So we do ask you to run the system check on the same day and time that you plan to do the testing, as well as choose to run the system check at the worst-case scenario network time that you know a lot of networked activity is occurring within your school and within your district, so you can kind of get a worst-case scenario number.
So the logic would follow, and this is then I'll be done, I promise. Thank you for answering all my questions, is basically to not do an infrastructure trial over wireless, because all wireless is a bridge from wireless to wired. What you really want to test is your network itself, which is the wired, which is the system at large, and that's your true testing capacity.
Well, but if you plan to actually do your online testing live for the field test using wireless, we do tell you to do your infrastructure trial test that way. You just need to actually have enough people set up that you take those authorization tickets and you actually launch tests from every wireless point location to make sure that everything launches appropriately. It just makes your infrastructure trial test very large and includes all of the people and all of the students potentially in your infrastructure trial test to actually simulate what you're going to be doing on the day of testing.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, I can take a few more questions. It's almost 12:30. That's when we'll go ahead and stop, but I've got about 4 more minutes if anybody has any more questions.
Your next question comes from the line of Roger Saffel. Your line is open.
Hey, my question is about doing the proctor caching test from inside the test session. I saw you went in and you click it, and it downloads that test to the proctor cache server.
Yes.
But if I have say 10 sessions hitting a proctor cache server taking the same test, does each teacher need to go in and do that proctor caching for their session, or is just one per server okay?
Just one per server is fine.
All right, thanks.
Sure.
Your next question. Oh,
no, go ahead.
Your next question comes from the line of Jerry Moore. Your line is open.
Hi. Okay, this question comes from the first session. Can you explain again the difference between enrolled and registered?
Sure. So your student data is like an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper. The front side is just who the student is and what school are they enrolled in. They can be enrolled in multiple schools within the state of Ohio or even within your district, but they can only be registered to test at one of those schools. So once the student is registered at your school, you now own that student registration, and no one else can register the student. They can enroll the student, but they can't register them, and they can't see any of the student registration information. All they can do is see that the student is in the system, have them in their school, but they won't be able to register them. So student data is first, who is the student, and have I placed and enrolled them within my district in a school? And then the second step is, have they been registered to test in my school? If they are registered to test somewhere else, you will not be able to register them. You will get an error message, and you will need to look at their enrollments, and you will be able to see the other enrollment. You will need to contact that school and let them know they need to unregister that student if the student has moved to your location and they need to be registered to test at your location.
Okay, but registered to test is different from being in a test session, correct?
That is correct. Registered to test means they're registered for the PVA or EOI administration, and they've been put in a registration group, which is absolutely different from a test session. All students, whether they are paper-based students or online-based students, need to be in a registration group. They need to be registered for the administration, put in a registration group, and assigned a test. They're assigned the grade 3 ELA, the grade 3 PVA, and EOI, whichever test they're assigned. Only online testing students then go to the extra step of being put in an online test session.
And when we uploaded the pre-ID file, which included group information, teacher name, and subject and course, that is what registered them, correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
Yes.
So that's okay.
And if you want to see all of your students that have been registered and make sure they've been registered or in a group, have a test assignment, you can come to Test Management Register Students, show all students, and you can request a registration file. It basically pulls out what I call a reverse student data file. So the student data file that you uploaded to get your students enrolled, registered in a group, and assigned a test, this will pull out a reverse of that file so that you can confirm that all of that information on your student is correct.
Okay, and in the student list, that one of the columns was student identifier. In Ohio, that is going to be the state SSID number?
That is correct. I believe Ohio has chosen to use that number.
Okay, so I can, if I have a student that I'm trying to get registered and can't because they're registered in another school district, I can see that, I can see where they are located, correct?
Yes, if you find them under student data, you will see the enrollment at the other location, so you will know what school they are at.
So the match is by SSID number, correct?
Yes, you
can. So I could just type in a kid's SSID number that I'm trying to register, and it will show me where that SSID number is currently registered.
Right, you would want to search for them under student data. You can use that SSID number to search for them, and it will bring them up, and you will see all of the schools that they are enrolled at. And if they are enrolled at a different school than yours, which is preventing you from registering them, that is the school you need to call.
Okay. And then let me go back, and I want to ask another question about the session. So in a computer lab, I can have several sessions going on. I could have a session for grade 3 reading, a regular no accommodations. I can have a session for one of my students who's getting the text-to-speech accommodation. He's getting a different form. He's in a different session. In that same lab, at that same time, can I also start 3 fourth graders taking the fourth grade language arts test with no accommodation? So I've got 3 sessions.
Yes.
Third grade, no accommodations, one third grader with accommodations, and then a small group of fourth graders with no accommodations.
Yes, that is all handled by policy. The system will allow you to start any test session anytime, all together, separately, whenever you want. It's all dictated by that start date. If they all have the same start date and you're starting them, you know, on that start date or later, you can start all your test sessions at one time.
Okay, then just one more for clarification. So now I'm in a high school. In my pre-ID file, I've got a student in Algebra 1, and he's in the pre-ID file registered for Algebra 1, but in actuality, he's also in geometry. He's taking both at the same time. But he's not registered for geometry, but he's enrolled at the school. So now the geometry, we want to do the geometry exam. Will I be able to locate him and register him for geometry?
Yes.
Take the test, even though he's not in the pre-ID file for that.
Yes, you can add a test to a student's registration. So if they're registered for PBA to take math, if you go to their registration account, which you'll see on my screen, you can actually add a test from the assigned test tab. and you would be able to then select another test and add that to their registration, and now they would be registered for PBA for both algebra and geometry.
And then a couple more questions. So so now I'm finishing the test. I've given every child the required 60 minutes. I want to finish session one, but a few students have asked for the additional time that they can get. I have to hold back everybody for those few kids that get their extra time. Can I end the session for all the kids that didn't ask for extra time, and now I'm waiting on the two kids that wanted the extra time to finish theirs?
You don't need to end the session. The session isn't clocking anybody's time. The time is clocked by the actual test administrator in the room, so the session isn't going to dictate that. But you can tell the students who are completed how to exit the test, and the students who aren't completed can stay and continue testing. That's at the discretion of the test administrator.
So I don't have to tell, I can just say we're not going to close anybody's test up until these final two students are finished, and we're going to close everybody up at the same time.
That is correct.
And then, just for my benefit here, so anytime I come to a session, I create a new testing session, I should be beginning every single student on a brand new test with new seal codes.
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you. That's very helpful.
Sure. All right, so we've reached 12:35. I'm going to go ahead and end the session. I realize that there are a lot of questions that we haven't answered, but please feel free to email those questions to Larry or call our customer support line. Actually, Larry, I will tell them to call the customer support line first. Please call our customer support line or email us at our customer support email address, which is located here in the support section. We have park@support.pearson.com. You can email us any of your questions, as well as you can call us at our call center at 888-493-9888. If they are policy questions or procedural questions around the administration, you may want to contact your state or district. But if they are functionality questions or how to get set up or how to use the tools that we've provided, please call us or email us, and we will answer those questions for you. As I mentioned, today's session has been recorded. I will get those recordings and clean them up and send them on to Larry, and he can post these. But there are also training materials available under training or training modules, which walk you through all of these processes I talked about today, as well as if you go to park.pearson.com/regional training, is all one word, it will download the regional training PowerPoint for you that was given in Ohio that also covers all of this information. It's about 140-plus slides, so it's a significant amount of information, and I do encourage you to download that information as well. I want to thank everybody for attending the Q&A session today, and please email us or call us if you have any other questions. Thank you. Have a good afternoon.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.